students from Phillips High School in Bronzeville, Chicago police officer Steve Bush, and singer, songwriter, and filmmaker David Singer. Now, here's your host, a man who might just invest in a kayak, Justin Kaufman.
It's probably better than some of those viaducts. Wow, what a day. What a day of images and, I'm sure, awfulness for a lot of Chicagoans. But, yeah, I'd invest in a kayak, but then automatically would tip over and I'd be, like, up to my lungs in sewer water. Yeah, so maybe not. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. What a day for Chicagoans, Chicago area residents, especially in the northern suburbs, Lake, Kane, McHenry County, parts of Cook. Terrible day for flooding. We're going to talk about that coming up here in the 7:30 hour. Mike Warner's going to join us from the Lake County Storm Water Commission. We're going to talk about Management Commission. We're going to talk about what to expect from the flooding that happened and, of course, the storms that are on their way in tonight. So if you're listening and you're affected by this and you have water in your basement or possibly on your street or even in your yard, I saw some pictures today, old buddies from McHenry County, you know, like McHenry, Crystal Lake, Wonder Lake, those kind of places where it just looked like their yard was a lake. It's just awful. So we'll talk about that and what to expect from the storms coming through and what are the big problem areas. You know, of course, we've heard all day about closures, roads, but I think the big issue is the rivers. And that's what I think the county officials are paying attention to. Fox, Des Plaines, other places, some of the water that's coming down from Wisconsin as well. We'll talk about that coming up here in the 7 o'clock hour. As we mentioned in the crosstalk with Roe and Anna, coming up at 8 o'clock, got kids from Phillips High School and officers from the Chicago Police Department together in studio to talk about a new workshop that the kids at Phillips put together to learn how to talk to each other. One of the big issues, and we've talked about this on the program, is just communication, community and police, trying to find a way to get on common ground. And the kids at Phillips, they did this, they put together this workshop that essentially invites the police to do skits, to do icebreakers, to take surveys and to answer questions, and to get even role-playing to better understand the relationship between the Chicago police and teenagers in the city of Chicago. They went to the Aspen Ideas Festival with their workshop, and they're going to talk to us about how that all went and how it was received coming up in the 8 o'clock hour tonight. That's great. Can't wait. 9 o'clock, David Singer's back. Love David. He was a filmmaker behind the local movie Imperfections. We talked to him. It came out into the festival circuit about a year ago. And now it's getting some distribution, so we'll talk with David about that. And he's got a show coming up at Steppenwolf. David, great musician in town, did the music for August Osage County. We'll talk with him. He's always great to have in studio. He'll be coming up at 9 o'clock. Also, we'll talk about a 5K this weekend to end homelessness. A Safe Haven puts it on every year. Interesting. I mean, that was 20-plus years of a Safe Haven in Chicago, trying to help homeless veterans get on their feet, get out of crisis, find permanent housing and employment. We'll talk with the president coming up here in the 9 o'clock hour. And then the swap meet with Greg Flamm. It's Wednesday night. It's time to, maybe if I feel terrible because it's like having the swap meet on a night when there's flooding. You know, that could, you're about, I had this great ball. Oh, it's in the basement. So maybe if your basement hasn't been flooded, maybe take it to the attic so we can talk about it tonight.
I had a really pretty hefty baseball card collection that was apparently lost in a flood. I'm still investigating. I know it's been about 20 years, but my parents said it was lost in a flood. But I'm like, I don't recall the basement ever flooding when I was a kid. So
you think it was just a ruse to get rid of them?
I think they just tossed them because they were sick of me, like, you know, they'd be able to be one of those things where, like, you know, we still got those baseball cards, you know, downstairs in the basement. Yeah, you know, I know. Just keep them there.
Yeah, right.
I think they got sick of that answer.
And I want to put some more stuff down there.
Right.
I got some VHS tapes that I want to put down
there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I remember one time one of the bad storms came through Chicago and we were putting a an extension like on the second floor of our house in Wonder Lake, and we had tarped off the area like after one day of work. I'm sure it was permitted. I'm sure there were permits involved. Yeah. My dad, you know, my dad and Fred and Art from you know, going eating, drinking Stroh's, hammering away on the top, right? But it like whipped the tarp off, and then like it rained into our house. It was one of those things where I just remember, like, you know, all the men of the house, me excluded, at the stairwell. You know, my brother and I, like, kind of looking up while they were trying to batten down the hatch, literally.
Literally, yeah.
So yeah, so that was, so familiar with flooding and water damage and all that kind of stuff. All right, news, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's time to carry out. All right, here are today's top stories. Flooding hit the Chicago area pretty hard. Between last night and today, basements and yards flooded. Cars were stalled in area viaducts. Roads were closed and flights canceled. Thousands still left without power. And more rain on the way tonight. Not good for Lake, Kane, McHenry counties, parts of Cook. We'll talk more about that coming up after 7:30 tonight. Also, how late to work do you have to be to try and drive through that flooded street? I mean, we should get someone on who tried to risk it just so we could ask, what was the hurry? What, you can't be late to work? Was a bathroom emergency? A desire to live risky? And this was your great opportunity? Like your Thelma and Louise moment? Let's see how far I can go. Great. And now you got to climb out of your car and get cholera. So enjoy that. The S&P today decided to leave well enough alone and abandon all the talk of turning the state of Illinois into junk. They were looking to give the state that distinction for its accrued debt. But the vote last week to approve a state budget worked to fend off the junk wolves. Speaker Madigan said that he hoped that Governor... Nope. Pass. Sorry, Speaker Madigan, you don't get a win on this one just because you passed the budget after 2.5+ years with no compromise. I mean, the fact that we're even talking about junk status had a lot to do with your leadership. So, yes, you staved off junk status for now, but you still need to know that we have the worst credit rating of any state in the union. So... thanks for the press conference. No thanks. Cool? I think we're cool. All right. New chief of staff for Governor Rauner wrote a memo to staff today, had this line in: mutual respect paired with radical candor will make this an even greater place to work. What is radical candor? What? Is that an hors d'oeuvre? Or is it just loud pleasantries? Pleased to meet you! Or maybe quiet threats. Oh, hello. I look forward to destroying you. Radical candor. That must be exhausting, right? Extra, extra, read all about it. You know you can get this news for free on your phone. But anyway, the Sun-Times is reporting that tomorrow the sale will be a done deal. The paper will be acquired by former alderman Edward Eisendrath and a group of labor unions. So what's it mean? Well, for one thing, it means the paper won't be purchased by Tronc and Michael Farrow. Tronc was the other bidder. It caused a lot of drama whether or not we're going to stay a two-newspaper town. What can we expect from Eisendrath? Well, I'm reading the Sun-Times article now, and it says, oh, wait, sorry, pop up. It's asking me to take a survey. How many movies have I seen in the last 2 weeks? I think three. Okay. When's the last time I bought a washing machine? That's your answer right there. China announced today that they're setting up their first overseas military base at the Horn of Africa. This would be their first base outside their own territories. Oh, that's great. What do you get them? What do you send? What does one send to celebrate a new military base? I don't know. A fruit basket? A Jelly of the Month Club? I mean, what says thanks for escalating more than a Jelly of the Month Club, right? What says can't wait for World War III? Donuts? I don't know. Kim Kardashian is dispelling rumors of cocaine use after she posted a video where she talked about something. I don't know what it was, but in the background, it looked like lines of cocaine were on the counter. First, she said it was candy dust. Then she changed her story, said it was reflective marble. Well, one thing's for sure. Who cares? Nobody, right? Let's move on from that one. In weather, those storms were ferocious last night and this morning. And look out, more coming later tonight. The pictures of some of the yards and houses, they're hard to look at. What's worse, flooding of the yard or flooding of the basement? Eh, who am I kidding? If the yard's flooded, chances are the basement is too. Thousands without power. Although I did read somewhere that the Chicago area has thousands without power regardless of weather. Like at all time, any moment, there are thousands without power. So when newspapers say there are 19,000 people without power, yeah, it's probably true, but there's always like 19,000 without power. I'm just saying. It's interesting. Flash flood warning tonight, 9 o'clock. In sports, the ratings are in for last night's All-Star game, and the game was actually beaten by America's Got Talent. Yep. More people opted for the talent show that features jugglers and dance troops than the shortstops and catchers of the All-Star game. Although I think the group that was eating fire last night was called Shortstops and Catchers, so there's that. The game itself was pretty boring as the American League won in extras on a Robinson Cano home run. So he's the hero. Who's the loser? Who's the GOAT? Oh, it couldn't be a Cub because we only had one guy and he was a reliever. So it was, wasn't it? Wade Davis was the only Cub and he gave up the game winner. Avi Garcia, I don't know what he needed, 0-for-2. So they get another day off today and tomorrow and they'll start up the second half of the season on Friday. All eyes on both squads as the trade deadline is only 18 days away. Will the Cubs make a move to bolster the rotation? Will the Sox trade every single player on the roster? Will the Cubs focus and make a run at the upstart Brewers? Will the Sox trade every single player on the roster? Lots of questions leading into the second half. Where do Chicago sports teams rank when it comes to the most lucrative franchises in sports? Well, none of our franchises cracked the top 10 of a list put out by Forbes today. The top spot goes to the Cowboys. The Yankees are in second. The soccer club Manchester United comes in third. Our first entry on the list, the Bears at 16. Cubs right behind them at 18. The Bulls at 22. No White Sox or Blackhawks in the top 50. The Brooklyn Nets and the LA Angels, they were like 49 and 50. So that's dumb. Those teams make more money than the Blackhawks? What? To be fair, there were no hockey franchises that made the top 50, but still. Really? The Brooklyn Nets? I mean, there's no excuse for the White Sox, but the Brooklyn Nets? Lauri Markkanen had his first big game of the Summer League last night. He put up 20 points and 10 rebounds. That, my friends, is called a double-double. In a meaningless victory against the Wizards, but good stats for the stretch four, who has a chance on a rebuilding team to get taller. I don't know really what else to say. NBA free agency movement. Is Rajon Rondo going to be the backup point guard for the Lakers? Maybe. And that's been your NBA free agency movement report. Actually, great talks heating up Carmelo Anthony to the Rockets. So the Rockets would have James Harden, Chris Paul, and Carmelo Anthony. Now we're talking, right? And finally tonight, the biggest iceberg in recorded history just broke away from Antarctica. This is not good as it signals to more trouble with global warming, rising sea levels, and attached iceberg fans. But I wouldn't worry about it. It'll melt, right? When reached for comment, the smaller iceberg said, sorry, it's me, not you. Can we still be friends? That's the carryout for July 12, 2017. Hey, here's your food. I know you don't usually tip on a carryout, but come on, have a heart. $1? Just a dollar. All right, coming up, talk about Lake County and flooding, what to expect with new rains expected tonight. And then we'll talk with the Chicago police and kids from Phillips High School learning how to talk to each other. It's Download tonight, 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my man?
I'm doing well, my friend. Doing well. How about you?
Doing good, man. I excluded an item from the... I hate when that happens with the carryout.
Hindsight.
The Jimmy Butler condo shots of his room full of shoes.
Yeah, River North Mansion on the market for $5 million.
And he's got a whole full closet, like a whole room, like essentially our master bedroom. Like, filled with shoes.
According to our good friends at DNA Info Chicago, about 526 pairs of shoes. Now, he seems to favor the darker colors, although I see a lot of powdered blue in there as well.
Are they all gym shoes? Are they all like,
they look to be, although they say there's some cowboy boots sprinkled in there as well. But I also see kind of the Jerry Seinfeld pure white sneakers as well.
It'd be awesome if he was just like a Zappo freak, or Zappos freak, you know, where he was just like, I like that one. That wingtip looks good. And he forgets to bring them back. But I don't think that's...
I'm all for good shoes, and I get it. These guys have money to burn. Yeah. But I don't know what you do with 526 pairs of shoes.
Wow. That's like you wear one pair of shoe a year. Like a year and a half you can go without wearing another pair of shoes.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. There are 365 mm-hmm. days in a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a pair and then some for each day.
That's what I mean. He's going to get all the way to like March or April.
Mm-hmm.
One of those.
I mean, we can do the math during the break.
Thanks, Rob. So download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 8 o'clock, the Chicago police and students from Phillips High School will be in studio, and we'll talk about a new workshop that is geared for teenagers in Chicago and Chicago police to learn how to talk to each other, to get along. And the workshop was created by kids at Phillips High School in Bronzeville. They took it to the Aspen Ideas Festival, a chance to present there. We'll talk about their findings and about that experience of going to Aspen. We'll have the kids and also police officers coming up here in the 8 o'clock hour tonight. Of course, the main story in Chicago area has to be flooding. Thousands still without power, transportation disrupted, and countless yards and basements are underwater, and more water is on the way. This is affecting several counties, including Kane, McHenry, parts of Cook. But Lake County took the biggest hit. Could this be record flooding for the county? Tom Skilling says 6 to 8 inches drops in parts of the county. Joining me on the line, Mike Warner, Director of Lake County Stormwater Management Commission. Mike, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. I know it's a busy day.
Yeah, thank you, Justin. It has been.
So talk about it. I mean, where are you seeing in your job as the, you know, with the Stormwater Management Commission, where are you seeing the most flooding and what has been the most damage?
Well, we're seeing it pretty widespread. So if you look at I'm going to put a plug in for the Lake County Passage website, which is a fantastic resource for motorists to look at what roads are flooded around the county. There's still 24 roads that are closed all over the county.
Wow.
So it's pretty widespread, and some of the local roads are opening up now, but we're more concerned with the main stem of the Des Plaines River coming up tomorrow.
Now, of course, with rains coming in tonight, that has to be the concern. You're expecting it to crest anyway because of the water that's already in the river with the water that's going to be added. I mean, are we back to the idea of some mass flooding along the riverbank?
We're crossing our fingers right now. So the National Weather Service does fold into their river forecast prediction expected rainfall, which is coming our way rapidly. The question is how much more rain are we going to get? And we're hoping that their forecast is on the conservative end. Right now, they show the river cresting at record stages all through the county. And we're hoping if that rainfall doesn't happen, we'll kind of maintain the status quo of where we're at now and be able to kind of flood fight our way out of this tomorrow and the following days.
When you say flood fight, what do you have to do to fight the river from cresting? I mean, is it sandbags and we're going back to sort of the traditional ways that you try to protect property and land and value when a river is going to flood?
Exactly. We've deployed, I guess as of this afternoon, there was 40,000 sandbags deployed, and there's another shipment coming in of another 100,000. So we expect the sandbagging to continue through tomorrow. Many of the river towns like Gurnee and Lincolnshire are also making use of sandbagging in certain areas that they know flood. The other thing that's happening is three centers have opened up for people that have been displaced because of the flooding.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is on the Red Cross website for Lake County, and they have opened up three emergency shelters for people that can't stay in their house.
Mike, you mentioned just in a couple minutes earlier just the idea of this being record-setting when it comes to the rivers. And anyone who's lived in the Chicago area and knows the news, and even if you don't live along the rivers, you've known this to be a problem with the Des Plaines and sometimes the Fox. I mean, to say it's record-setting, you know, it's eye-opening for people who not just live along the river but also, you know the area pretty well.
It is, and I think it becomes a reality when you can't drive around the county because of all the flooded roads. One success story I've got to mention is the Gurney Grade School. That used to take an entire day or two to sandbag alone, and that's no longer there. It's been demolished, and the school's been moved to a flood-free location.
When you're dealing with, we're talking with Mike Warner, he's the director of Lake County Stormwater Management Commission, and when you're dealing with severe weather like this, especially flash floods and rains that come in at this kind of volume at such a quick pace, what can you do from the county? What can you do for preparedness? I mean, is it sort of everything that happens after the fact and cleanup, or what can be done to for the next rainstorm and the next one that come in? Do we have to start thinking differently about how we deal with flooding in the region?
That's a great question, and we've struggled with that over the years. And what we came up with was a flood response system where we keep an eye on rainfall. So we have gauges at our office and around the county. And we also tap into other resources that are on the internet and also field staff. So we monitor rivers on a frequent basis, and when we think we're getting into flood stage, we'll mobilize kind of step by step as those flood problems get worse. We go from green to yellow to orange to red, and guess what? We are in red now.
Yeah, right. Well, Mike, I mean, this has to do with, forgive me for my ignorance, but it has to do with the fact that we had severe weather last week or the week before, and the ground is pretty saturated, and the river's already pretty full from the severe weather that came through just, I think it was last week or what have you. That's usually when you recognize that the next big storm that's coming through is going to be dangerous.
That's right. That setup period is key, so that does saturate the soil and fill some low-lying areas, and that did happen before we got this rainfall last night. So we had gotten a couple events earlier, maybe a few days ago, that have kind of set us up for this situation that we're in now.
Mike, when we think about, for the people who are listening right now or are affected by this, they have water in their basement or their street and their roads in front of them are flooded. You know, you guys are very particular about staying away from that water because of what could be in it, disease and other dangerous situations that you don't want to go in the water, you don't want to go around it. But when you think about it being in your basement and maybe being power out, there's a lot of safety concerns that people should be aware of.
There are, and three of them that we've tried to get the message out, and I appreciate the opportunity for this, is that number one is, don't try to drive through flooded areas on roads, because that's the number one response problem or situation that we've had today. Is there's been dozens of stranded motorists that have their cars have died, in deep water. One intersection had three cars side by side, so one guy tried to get through, the next guy, and they all had to be rescued. The second one is, as you mentioned, if your basement's flooded and your power is still on, or even if it's off, don't go down your basement, because if it's in contact with the power, there's a possible electrocution problem or safety concern. And then the third one, of course, is downed power lines that may be on the road. There, a lot of trees fell during this last storm. Actually, I had one fall in my yard as well that I had to take care of after work today, but once those power lines are knocked down, they become a severe safety hazard.
So for tonight, with the storms that are expected to come through, you guys are prepared for them, but you're hoping and crossing fingers for a conservative estimate, the National Weather Service saying, whatever the estimation is in terms of the rainfall, you really need it to be on the conservative side, because if it's more than expected, it could be trouble for you guys.
Yeah, and conservatively low is what we hope for. So any tenth of an inch of rainfall, you know, we're concerned with, and it's going to negatively impact flood heights around the county.
Mike Warner is a director of the Lake County Stormwater Management Commission. He joined us tonight. Mike, thanks for all your work and helping today, and good luck with the rainfall tonight and, of course, tomorrow. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Justin.
Yeah, let's hope for a conservative rainfall tonight. I'm not... My heart goes out to people. I mean, because it's you see all on Facebook and people put up, like, this is my yard, things like that. And inevitably the responses are, well, you can go skiing. Well, crude. But that's that is a mess to clean up.
Yeah, water is the worst.
Yeah, and the idea that so many people in our area are dealing with that right now as more water comes through, not even to even get into the implications that, you know, this is a new normal. I mean, like... The idea that this is record-setting, possibly record-setting flooding from the Des Plaines River, that says something. If you live in the Chicago area, you know about this time of year, even a little bit later, spring as well. You get to a certain point where you're like, yeah, the Des Plaines River is going to flood, right? To be record-setting, that's not good. So good luck to everybody out there tonight. And, you know, we can check in tomorrow. We can talk about, again, about how Lake County, Kane County, McHenry County, parts of Cook dealt with the rainfall and the flooding that is expected tomorrow as the rivers crest. Ay, ay, ay. You know what I'm also very happy about? Up to this point, I think it's been 54 minutes into the show. No talk of Donald Trump Jr. I think it's a record, right?
You do something?
I don't know. Maybe not today. There's a lot of speculation. The only reason I say that is out of the corner of my eye, Roe leaves up CNN. He's got CNN on the. There's screens in you know, here in the Michigan Avenue studio, and he leaves CNN up. I always will change it to baseball. Like I always put like the. There's nothing on at 7:50 on CNN that is breaking. They'll put right now. It's breaking. Legal. Boom. Bang. Bang. Developing. Bad. But there's no baseball. So I'm like, just leave CNN on. But the one thing I did notice I wanted to mention was. The story, and I only saw the scroll, I didn't care about the talking heads, was that today President Trump once again came out on record saying he didn't know about the meeting that happened with the Russian lawyer that his son, Jared Kushner, and Paul Manafort, at the time his campaign director, had. He said, I just recently heard about it. And I'm being objective about it. But I will say, we have been down this road before where now it's going to come out, oh, the president did know. Oh, well, you know, changes it up. And I, you know, I'm just saying, like, the idea that, and we talked about it last night in the carryout, it's becoming harder and harder as an American to listen to the president and take him at face value based on the fact that 2 days later, the story changes from his own mouth, from his own spokespeople, from his own Twitter account. And so, again, when you say it's just the first time, it automatically pops in your brain where you're like, I doubt it. I doubt it. You probably did know. I'm not saying it's illegal. I'm not saying anything about it. But, you know, whenever there's a formal sort of moment where they're put on the record, like, I did not have sexual relations with that woman. It's the same concept. I mean, I think leaders across the board, when they exclaim something, you're like, nah, I don't know if I buy it. So that's of interest to me when I saw that just scroll across CNN that the president has on record said he did not know about that meeting.
It doesn't matter.
No,
you know,
maybe
I mean, that's the
yeah.
thing. I mean, he can pretty much say what he wants.
Absolutely. And
there's ramifications.
And
yet.
Maybe to a certain extent, I mean, it's just a news article. He's talking to, he's not under oath. He's not lying to, mm-hmm. he, and I'm not saying he's lying in this case. And frankly, the jury's still out in my mind about whether or not a meeting with this lawyer is a distraction or a smoking gun, as said in the news. They're still, you know, just try to like sort of let it play out. But just that little nugget where you're like, oh, the president came out and said definitively that I did not know about this. Just remember that in 3 days when he's like, well, I did know about it. I first time I was talking about it or something like that.
A tweet came out in an interview between Scott Pelley and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And Scott Pelley asked Hillary Clinton point blank, have you ever lied before?
What'd she
say? And Hillary Clinton's response was, well, I don't think that I have. So now you fast forward to where we are now with this Trump situation and Trump Jr. It's like, well, I don't think that I have misled people, not knowingly anyway.
Yeah, that's how everybody gets out of it, right? Well, I didn't know I was lying.
See, that's why I don't play these types of news reports in front of my kids, because then when I ask them if they've done something, well, I don't think that I did that, Dad.
Oh, man, it's a new world. New world, or maybe not. You know, like I said, I read that Hue book about Vietnam and Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon, and they were doing the same thing where they were misleading the public by saying one thing and meaning something else. And like I just made a reference to Bill Clinton in 1998. So maybe it's not new. I don't know if Donald Trump is doing new. This is we all want to act like this is territory we've never been in before, but that's probably not the case. I wasn't around for, you know, the Woodrow Wilson days, but maybe he was doing the same thing.
If Gerald Ford had Twitter, oh my God.
Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest just returned from the Aspen Ideas Festival. No, they're not high-end policymakers or best-selling authors or directors of a think tank. Nope, even better. It's a group of kids from Wendell Phillips High School in Bronzeville. They had won a challenge sponsored by the Aspen Institute for a concept called Tactics. It stands for Teens and Cops Together in Chicago Successfully. The kids teamed up with Chicago police officers to design a series of workshops for both officers and high school students to build trust and a culture of understanding, to learn how to talk to each other. The goal is to take these workshops to other schools and areas in Chicago and to even work on legislation in Springfield. Like I said, the team brought this idea to the Aspen Ideas Festival last month, and they are in studio tonight to tell us how it all went. Sean Waite is a Phillips junior, going to be a junior, right, Sean?
Yep.
Thanks for being here. Trayvon Walker is also going to be a junior at Phillips. Trayvon, thanks for being here.
Yep.
Also, Corinne Durrett, she's one of the two Aspen team coaches and instructor at Phillips Academy. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And also, Chicago police officer Steve Bush. Officer Bush, pleasure. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Justin.
All right, so let's get into it, you guys. First off, I've never been to Aspen. Is it nice? Is it a nice town?
It was beautiful, man. Like, my first impression, it just kind of breathtaking. Of course, you know, just scenery, beautiful.
Yeah,
simple
right?
as that.
I wanted to stay. I ain't wanted to come back at this point. I liked it, the mountains, the views. It was wonderful to me. I like to see something new. So
right. Yeah. I know. It sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about this. Let's talk about Tactics. That's why you're here. Tactics, which is Teens and Cops Together in Chicago Successfully. Let me ask you guys, why is there a need for this? Why is there a need for teens and cops to get together and, like it says, Teens and Cops Together in Chicago Successfully?
Me personally, I believe the reason why Tactics needs to be here is because basically, I'm sure everybody here, you live in Chicago. You know, you obviously see the tension that goes on between police officers and especially black minorities. And it's not like how it used to be. You know, what happened to the respect, what happened to the love, that feel, you know, the police officer being your next father almost or next mother, you know.
Or mentor.
So, like, me personally, I feel like, you know, this needs to happen because although, yeah, we don't necessarily have to have them love them, right? You know, but we got to have them respect each other because at the end of the day, they're still here to protect mm-hmm. us. And that's pretty much it. We got to respect them.
And I would think from the same point, Officer Bush, you could say that probably goes both ways.
Absolutely. You want the bond to be as high as possible between people in every situation, right? So once we establish a bit of trust, you know, break the ice, so to speak, how can that not help?
Right.
In our situation or in any situation where people have to come together.
And there's something to be said about the idea of having relationships with police officers so that if you're in any situation, whether you're pulled over or you're there to help with a crime, whatever it might be, there's already an acquaintance level. There's the fact that you know people. Corinne, I want to bring you in as well. When the kids talk this way about wanting to develop a new relationship of respect with police officers, what's your role in putting all this together?
So myself and Gabrielle Benoit, we're both coaches. So we got the challenge from the Aspen Institute and put a group of kids together. Actually, half of the team is pretty much a boys' swim team. So I knew they had good work ethic. But they actually chose this challenge themselves. So they were presented with a lot of different things that they could pick from, and they chose this one. And they don't know, but when they told us that's what they wanted to focus on initially, the two of us were kind of like, ooh, this is going to be hard. You know, if we want to win, guys. But I think it was really cool that they created a space to build a better community. And I think that that's what this relationship will bring about, or has the potential to bring about, if, you know, if both parties are working hard, which it seems, at least in Bronzeville, that is happening right now. The level of support that the officers have given and that the students have shown, the level of interest that students have shown, has been really inspiring.
And I want to get to how you went about this and also what you accomplished by putting together the workshops. Sean, when the challenges are put in front of you from the Aspen Institute, why was this one that was especially important for you to get involved in?
The reason why I feel like it was so important, me personally, when I was growing up, I never really had a relationship with the police officers. Like, I never hated them, but then I never really liked them either, you know. It was kind of neutral. But it wasn't until, you know, I heard about two of my friends actually had gotten murdered. I don't want to say murdered, you know. Police brutality, you know, the whole get-go, everything, and they ended up dying in a police interaction. And since then, again, I didn't really feel any type of way about it because, again, I wasn't really into the news and such as that. So, yeah, I didn't really think much about it at the time. But when I grew up, you know, and I heard this come about, I was like, oh, so I actually do have some type of connection with this. Let me see if I can change it to prevent that. Mm-hmm. That's just how I feel about it.
Trayvon, what about you? What was it about this challenge that grabbed your attention?
Well, for me, growing up on the south side of Chicago, it was more like the police was your enemy. And for me to see that, this helped me bring a better relationship and see what's, like, how they is going, how they go through the police thing. And it was an upcoming thing for me, because just for me to learn and to see, like, they have a life, too. They have a family, and they want to make it home every night. Mm-hmm. And they have things to go through every night, too. So it's hard, but it was a good thing to go through.
Officer Bush, listening to the kids talk and to hear things like, when I was growing up, the Chicago police were the enemy, or I didn't think much of them. I mean, what kind of reaction do you have to that as an officer on the force?
Well, I guess there's two reactions. You can kind of numb up and just get through the day, right? But last Friday, I celebrated my 20th anniversary.
Congratulations.
As a Chicago police officer.
Congrats.
So who wants to do that for 20 years, you know? And meeting young people like Sean and Trayvon, it gets you a little inspired to want to do a little bit about it. So it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And they initially reached out to us at a BEAT meeting, which is a community meeting, neighbors and police getting together on the BEAT once a month. And these young people approached us at a BEAT meeting on their own time. So I decided on my own personal time, I guess I need to reach out to them, and let's see where this goes.
And let's do this. Let's take a break so we stay on time tonight. But I want to get into the details of that, because I would assume that that would be something unique, mm-hmm. to have teenagers coming to the BEAT meeting and wanting to talk to you on their own time. In studio tonight, Sean Waite, Trayvon Walker, Corinne Durrett, and Chicago Police Officer Steve Bush. Talking about tactics, teens and cops together in Chicago successfully. A group of kids from Wendell Phillips High School brought this concept to the Aspen Ideas Festival. We'll talk about the festival and all that coming up as well here in the Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We got a full studio tonight. Chicago Police Officer Steve Bush is with us. Also, Corinne Durrett. She's one of two coaches for the Wendell Phillips Academy High School team that came up with a concept that was sponsored by the Aspen Institute called Tactics. Stands for Teens and Cops Together in Chicago Successfully. Two of the kids are in studio, juniors at Phillips, Sean Waite, Trayvon Walker. We talked right before the break about the idea of you guys coming to the BEAT meeting to talk to police officers. Talk us through that. Is that where you guys decided to start this project, to say, all right, let's reach out to police officers. Let's go to the CAPS meeting. Let's get the ball rolling.
Well, at first, I did not know what a BEAT meeting was.
Really?
I did not. So for me to go there, it was like I didn't know. But once I got the concept of it, it was like people wanted to get their problems done up in their community, mm-hmm. and wanted to see a change. So it was wonderful for me. But to talk to the police officers there, it was hard because I'm not like that people person. So it was more like a get to know them and get their number and see if they want to come to like some of our workshops that we have created.
I was going to say, they didn't just like show up and say hi. So before we went, we were talking about, okay, we need to figure out ways to quantify this. How can we get data from this project? So we said we need to survey students, we need to survey police officers, but where can we find a lot of police officers?
Right.
So I said, I heard something about a beat meeting or a CAPS meeting or something like that. So we all Googled it together. And before we went, they made a survey and we took tablets in there. But it was, you know, they had a plan when they went in. And by the end of the meeting, I think they shook every single officer's hand, introduced themselves, wrote down numbers. I mean, at this point, they I don't even know how many officers' numbers you guys have in your phones.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's not terrible.
For me, kind of, again, touching on what they were saying, it was a bit surprising at first. Again, I didn't know anything about beat meetings either, same as Trayvon. I mean, but when I got the idea of it and when they started explaining it to us, you know, I thought about it. You know, it's kind of same thing like a town hall, so it shouldn't be that hard. It was a lot better than my initial plan. I was going to call 911 and say, hey, can you get some police officers down here? I need to get a couple numbers.
I didn't know about that plan.
That's why you're a good team coach, right?
So, yeah, like, when we went, it was a good vibe and everything. We got the police officers that were pretty nice. You know, we got a couple that didn't want to participate, and then we did have those who did. And, you know, I'm thankful for those who did, especially Mr. Bush. He was there since the beginning, and, you know,
he's our number one supporter.
Yeah.
Well, Officer Bush, let me ask you. I mean, being running CAPS meetings and BEATS meetings and have the kids show up in this form, what was your first reaction to it? Were you surprised at the interaction or that the kids wanted to come out to this?
Sure. Pleasantly surprised. At first, we were like, well, you don't see this every day. And then Corrine's so young looking. I just thought there was a lot of young people interested in our little BEAT meeting. But, you know, you're like, well, how could that be? And, yeah, they introduced themselves and, you know, getting to know Sean and Trayvon. You know, Sean's spoken about some of his hardship situations growing up involving police. And look at him now. He's reaching out to us. I don't think noble is overstating what we can credit Sean with being, you know, at this point. And Trayvon as well, I've gotten to know him. He's handled some hardships that I didn't have to growing up. So, you know, it's easy to take someone up on the offer when they reach out first, like these young people did. That was them. It wasn't me. So I took them up on it initially because they reached out to me. So I said, well, we'll see what this is about. And so I got involved in some workshops at Phillips High School. And truth be told, I kept going because it was personally uplifting. It really was.
Really? So tell me about the workshops. Talk about what happens in the workshops. What makes them special?
So pretty much the way it works is we survey students in our school. That's what we started off with. We handed out about, 140 surveys? And we got 40 yeses. Just enough for us to have our first workshop.
What was the question on the survey?
First, the first one was, do you trust the police?
Well, scale 1 to 10.
Yeah. Yeah.
How much do you know your rights?
If you wanted to
attend one of our workshops.
So you got enough for the survey, but let's talk about that first, that 1 to 10. What was that number? I mean, was it overwhelmingly, did the kids trust the police?
I'll talk on that. Pretty much from the surveys that we handed out in the beginning, over 50% of the students ranked their trust for police officers lower than a 5 on a 1 to 10 scale, you know, 10 being the most and 1 being the least. And, of course, we found that data outrageous. So we had to change it around, and that's what the workshops come into play.
All right, so let's talk about the workshop. So what happens in the workshop?
Well, the workshop itself is a 2-week process. We have three sets of students, and they get broken up into the different workshops. First one is focused on icebreakers and skits. It's pretty much just to get the kids used to the environment, let them see who they're going to be working with for this next process.
Yeah.
The second one is working on knowing your rights and do's and don'ts in certain scenarios with police officers.
So in the workshops, are police officers present?
Yes.
So the idea is you're working through, you're doing skits with police officers?
Yes.
Sounds like a good old Saturday Night Live, right?
Yeah. We've got a couple videos on it. Actually, if you want, just check out our Facebook page. They should be posted up on there at Team Tactics. Follow us on Facebook.
All right, we'll put it up. So you have that. And then the police officers, Officer Bush, you work together with letting the kids know their rights and understanding what to do in certain situations?
What that is like, teens get to know their rights. So if they get pulled over by a police officer, they wouldn't have to go out, like, just call them names and all that and ask them why did they pull them over. They can actually just ask them for a valid reason, like, why did you pull me over, or what did I do this time?
And
This time.
Yeah, that's pretty much the second one.
Corinne, let me bring you in here. I mean, putting this together, I mean, the idea of being sensitive to the idea that you want to be able to represent the kids, but you also want to respect the police officer involved. Mm-hmm. How difficult was it to get the kids and the police officers in the right space to communicate with each other?
I would say they did the work of getting the people in the space, so yeah. It wasn't hard for me. I would say the difficult part for me came when they were making the curriculum for the workshops, because I'm a teacher. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what are you going to do for the first 5 minutes? And then what's going to be your hook and what's going to be your exit ticket, right? So I'm over here thinking logistically
about
how this is going exactly
right,
how
right.
is this going to
work. Be a teacher at the
And so myself and Gabby, we had to kind of back off a little bit and let them do it. And after each workshop they did, you know, we sat and we were like, okay, what could have gone better? What went well, right? So I think that especially at the icebreakers and those types of activities, those went really well. And then they had another workshop where they were talking about, like, more difficult, meaty things where they brought up some
Q&A
discussion topics. Yeah, like
Q&A,
like, is what's happening right now appropriate, right? So that was difficult
that was
for me to stay out of
right.
and kind of let them control that space and not let my own opinions.
Was the idea of the third part of that workshop, was it the idea to get real?
That was kind of the end goal, you know. Yes, we're still trying to get kids to respect them, but why not have them get a personal relationship?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where the kids can go talk to a police officer. Hey, can I get your number? You mind if we join the Explorers Club? Or just to touch a little bit on that, the Explorers Club is another police-led program, which me and Trayvon's are actually members of in our at our local police station, which is actually on, 51st and Wentworth?
Yeah.
With that, you know, we get to step in the shoes of police officers. We go on trips with them. It was just all that. Yeah, we also participated in peer jury meetings in which we were given the task of coming up with age-appropriate sanctions for teens who committed crimes. It was actually kind of fun, you know, having that power and being able to, bad cop, good cop stuff. It was kind of fun.
Let's do this. Let's take a break, and we'll get an update on tonight's news. Sean Waite, Trayvon Walker, Corinne Durrett, and Officer Steve Bush in studio tonight. We're talking about tactics, teens and cops together in Chicago successfully. It was taken to the Aspen Ideas Festival, this workshop and curriculum. And when we come back, I want to talk about the Aspen Festival, how it went, and what you learned from doing that. And also, you know, we'll talk about how you can take what you guys learned in getting police and teenagers to talk to each other to other communities. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, Sean Waite, Trayvon Walker, Corinne Durrett, and Officer Steve Bush. We are talking about tactics, teens and cops together in Chicago successfully. An idea sponsored by the Aspen Institute from teenagers at Phillips High School in Chicago who really wanted to reach out and be able to create a dialogue to better understand and improve the relationship and communication between teenagers and police officers in and around Phillips High School in Bronzeville. You guys took it to the Aspen Ideas Festival. Before we get to how that went, Officer Bush, I want to bring you in. How difficult was it for you to be a part of the workshops when the kids had pointed questions or wanted to talk about their relationship with the police? Was it something that you expected to happen? I mean, did the icebreakers help in the way that everyone seemed to be more respectful in those kind of conversations?
Oh, sure. And it was fun. My job was to enjoy it and have fun. Sean, Trayvon, Corinne, they did the organizing. They did the leading. I was just having some fun with icebreakers. Some team building, communication skills.
What did you learn?
Well, you know what I've learned, and I am learning that things are getting better in the city of Chicago. And, for instance, Phillips High School is the state football champion. Look what Sean and Trayvon are doing in their school. I can look back 10 years ago, those kind of things were not happening at Phillips High mm-hmm. School. And in particular, you know, just going about what I've been experienced in. So I enjoyed it. I think the hardest part was just getting up because I kind of work late. And they get the credit for doing all the work. I was glad to be a part of it. And like I mentioned earlier, it was an uplifting experience. So I really looked forward to the meetings as things got rolling.
Shaw, what did you learn? And Trayvon, having the experience to do icebreakers with police officers, to hear your classmates and others talk about the issues, what did you learn about yourselves and your relationships with the police?
I learned personally about myself that I'm pretty much good at leading. I don't want to, you know, seem all cocky and everything, but I feel like with me being the president of our group and having to lead our group into, you know, the right direction every time, I felt that was a pretty uplifting thing too. Things I learned about the people is I learned how sometimes some people don't even want to better themselves, and most people just go with what's going on with the group, the trend that's going on.
Yeah.
And that like sparked my mind crazy, because I was like, wait, like, wow, like people aren't as individual as they try and make themselves to be. You know, they feed off others' input, and that in and of itself is kind of scary. And that's something I learned. But, you know, once you get the ball rolling, that momentum going, it's kind of hard to stop it. And that's what we're going to keep going through. Because, like, with us, we got the ball rolling when it first came to us, stepping foot in that first beat meeting. And ever since then, we just been keep moving. That's all. That's the, kind of our motto almost, you know.
Gotta keep moving.
Yeah, gotta keep moving pretty much.
Trayvon, for you, what did you learn? And I'll also ask the question, you know, when you talk about getting the ball rolling, do you feel that tactics has made an impact at Phillips? Do you think that a lot of your classmates look at their relationship with the police differently?
Well, first, what I learned was that it was a fun experience. For me to be the designer, I designed the logo for our team.
Said with a big smile.
Yeah. It was a long logo. So it's hard to make. It was fun just to see that how some of our classmates wanted to do this and how they can inspire the other ones. Because over the weeks of our workshops, we had more students to come. Mm-hmm. So it was some students that said no, but they still came.
Yep.
So we just let them come in, and it was fun.
Did it have an impact, you think, on your classmates?
Yes, because now we got students, our classmates, coming up to us in the hallways, like, when is our next workshop?
Yep.
They're making it cool now.
Pretty much.
Well, let's talk about Aspen. All right, so you guys went there. I mean, the Aspen Ideas Festival, you know, usually, like I said at the top, you know, a lot of think tank and policy experts and people in the audience. You kids get up there in front of them and give them your workshop. First of all, tell us how it went over and what you learned from presenting this to people in Aspen.
Well, what I learned from presenting is that no matter what you is and how much power you got, we all the same. And for me to go to the Aspen Ideas Festival, it was fun because I get to see a lot of things. I was talking to the Secret Service people that was there, so yeah.
For me, something that I learned is that people, I guess when you get older, you know, the saying goes, you hear less but you talk more. That's not always true. At the Ideas Festival, I felt like we got our message out pretty deep. You know, people understood what we were about and what we're trying to do. Let me just specify, you know, this isn't just in the Brownsville community. We're trying to reach all the way out to the, all throughout Chicago and hopefully all across the nation. Like, we're going global. And none of that, like, we gave our curriculum to the Brownsville Community Action Council, which is another local community organization in the Brownsville community. And we hope that they can take our curriculum and take it to other schools. So far, I don't believe they have yet. But we personally, we've been throwing our own.
You guys had to, both of you guys had to buy in. Officer Bush, you had to buy in. All eight of you. I mean, but you had to buy into this relationship.
Yeah.
You had to go to the beat meeting and to buy in. As you try to expand this and bring it to different communities in Chicago, there has to be buy in. The kids want to have to come to the beat meeting. The police officers have to be open to having those conversations and relationship. Are you optimistic that your curriculum can easily be brought to another community the way it thrived in yours?
That's one thing that we tried to focus on the most when we were making our curriculum, is trying to make it as bland, not bland, but
generic,
as versatile
as
possible. You know, trying to make sure that as long as you have a room and some time aside, you can do whatever. The icebreakers don't depend on anything. You know, you can easily come up with a couple scenarios and have them make a skit about it. Just as long as you have a room, time, and police officers on your side and some students that's, they don't even have to be willing, you know, just some students, it's going to work. And that's what we focused on the most.
Corinne, I want to bring you in as we start to wrap up here. You as someone who is one of the coaches, mm-hmm. what did you learn from this experience, being a third party, if you will, mm-hmm. to watch the kids interact with the police officers and build this curriculum?
Yeah. So for me, I'm not from Chicago. I'm from Virginia. So it's really interesting to me to dig into a community. So in Chicago, right? I hadn't been to community meetings before. I didn't have a ton of ties here, but I feel more connected to Bronzeville because of these guys. And I think one of the most interesting things about the whole thing was when we spoke to a few officers before we did all of this, they said that they really are only in contact with teenagers if something negative happens, right? And then the teenagers said that they didn't really trust police officers because they felt like they only had contact with police officers when there was something negative happening. So I think that the fact that they created a space, like a proactive space instead of a reactive one, right, where you can bring things in and then see where that grows, like that's how you build community rather than a whole bunch of people reacting to one another.
Right.
So that's, I would say, what I learned.
Officer Bush, you know, as you mentioned, you're celebrating your 20th anniversary in the force. Has that always been the case? I mean, has it always been a reactive relationship with teenagers in Chicago, more than proactive?
I suppose in some of the higher crime neighborhoods where we're just bouncing around like pinballs, you know, responding to calls. So you're constantly dealing with a specific problem, a specific situation, and maybe there just isn't enough time, you know, to walk the beat. So, sure, there's room for improvement. And these young adults here and Corinne, their teacher, they're working hard, but they're also creating some inspiration. And what I'm taking away from all this is that there are a lot of needs in the city of Chicago, but maybe what it boils down to, the number one need is inspiration, you know, for people to believe that there's something to look forward to, something better. And these two young adults here are examples of people who have decided to do something and better the situation and inspire others around them, more importantly.
Police Officer Steve Bush, Chicago police officer. Also, Corinne Durrett. She's one of the two coaches for the team from Phillips High School who came up with the idea of Tactics. Stands for Teens and Cops Together in Chicago Successfully. They look to take that curriculum and workshop citywide, nationwide, global, cool. As they mentioned. Sean Waite and Trayvon Walker are two of the members of that team from Phillips High School. I can't thank you guys enough for coming in here and talking to them about the project, and congratulations on its success.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great to have those kids in studio, have them in the conversation with Chicago police officer, for them to take their story to Aspen, which is usually reserved for think tanks, policy experts, authors, things like that. For everybody across the board to work on something that is truly about making communities more positive. I had a chance to, and I've talked about this, I think, before on the program. I remember, and, you know, it kind of was brought up as well in the convo, but the, you know, there's this, I don't know, this way that people will talk about police, especially when their kids are around. So when you have a young kid and there's a police officer that comes, a police officer told me this story on the radio one time. He was walking past and a yard, and he said hello, his beat cop walking on the street. And the mom was like, to the 3-year-old or 4-year-old, he's like, well, if you get in, don't get too close to, you know, don't get in trouble or I'll have this officer arrest you. You know, that if you don't stay in the yard, this officer is going to get you. And, you know, there's a certain reality to the idea that sets up a very strange pattern
mm-hmm.
that continues that the officer, the police,
put it in the mind that that's a bad person.
They're not your friend. They're the one who's going to do something to you. And I was just thinking about this, and, you know, I kind of, it's a bonding moment. It's not meant, I don't think it's ever meant to be that mean-spirited by a parent to say that. I think it's just kind of joyful and a joke, you know, because I was walking through the, my son to camp, and a police officer had pulled over somebody that was right by the camp. This was just the other day. And the cherries were on, the whole thing. And I go, I started the conversation. I said something to my son. I said, hey, you know, looks like they're coming to get. And I was like, and then I just stopped myself because of that conversation I had with that police officer. I was like, and then he said, what? I'm like, nothing. And I go, you know, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You don't need, it doesn't concern you. No, but I mean, what I ended up talking to him saying, you know, police officers, you know, that you're lucky to have police officers in your community, and, you know, it's a good thing, and you should develop a relationship. They're good to have around, essentially. But I mean, I can understand to be part of a community in which, as Sean said right at the top, you know, to have friends who have been, you know, killed, in situations with police. I mean, that's not something that, I mean, imagine you said being 15, 16 years old, having a friend of yours shot and killed and gone, and it had to do with an altercation with police officers. I mean, you'd feel like you would have the right, if you were Sean, to develop some sort of attitude or some sort of predisposition towards police officers. Right. Don't you think?
Of course. I mean, I hated them, and they just came to the prairie to take my six-pack of Strohs that I was drinking when I was 18 or something, you know?
Right.
I was angry with them.
No, you're right.
It's real.
And I think it's something inherent in the way that we are as human beings as well, because I think of my 16, 17-year-old and getting my license, and police officers were not your friends. You drive through. I remember drive through McCollum Lake. Away from McHenry to Wonder Lake, there was a speed trap. It was famous. Went from like 55 to 35. And the cops were always very aggressive in McCollum Lake. They had the reputation. They seemed to sort of enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
They'd hide. They're more creative in the way they hid behind the barn silo or, you know, underneath. You could tell that they'd spent some time, put some brush on the front of the car. And felt like, you know, you'd hear all these stories. It's like, well, there's a quota and they got to hit their quota. These guys are looking to get you. And so it would develop a automatic sort of relationship or attitude towards police officers. And so the idea that all that exists before even anything happens to you. And imagine if you live in a community in which, you know, the relationship's already eroded.
Mm-hmm.
A workshop like this is, I mean, tremendous. So I hope it goes places. I think it's a valiant opportunity for Chicago. Now, I asked the question. I don't know if it was answered, but, you know, how do you convince police officers in neighbor like Inglewood or teenagers, you know, at Robeson High School to be a part of this? I mean, do you run the risk that the relationship has been damaged to the extent that there is no point where they're going to do skits together in the gymnasium? You know what I mean? It's fascinating, though. I'm happy they're doing it, and I'd love to continue the conversation because I think at the heart of it, you're not going to change the patterns of crime in the city by just changing mandatory minimums and gun laws or trying to take guns off the street. There has to be a more holistic way of approaching this. And it seems like the kids at Phillips get it. The police officers in that area get it. And, you know, I want to continue that conversation to talk about the relationship between communities and police and if there's a way they can just talk to each other and figure things out. So we'll continue that conversation here on The Download. All right, coming up, we're going to make a shift and go from talking to the police to the homeless. We're going to talk about a 5K, which is coming up from a Safe Haven Foundation. It's amazing. Safe Haven's been around now for 23 years in Chicago. It's a great organization that is really geared to their mission statement is to end homelessness, period. And that the myriad ways that they can do that, and they're trying to do that every single day, and the way that they operate, and they have 6-point bullet points and all the stuff on their website, and they were going to talk about it. But their big annual sort of fundraiser event is coming up this weekend at Montrose Harbor, 5K to End Homelessness,
nice.
Safe Haven Foundation. So Nelly Vasquez Roland will be in studio, co-founder, president.
You going to get out there?
I don't think I will.
Do some jogging?
Do some slow walk, some fast walking?
Some jogging?
I'm a fast walker. I'm not much of a jogger.
I'm sure you could. I'm sure they allow, in the 5K they allow a fast walk.
Yeah, no, they say walk and run on the
oh.
5K run and walk. I think you have to. It's probably someone. Some 5K got sued because someone decided to walk fast. They're like, this is not a run. I will walk fast. I expect damages. Being expected to run, so they call. I think it's run and walk. It should be run in parentheses fast walk because you can't slow walk it. Imagine the whole event is ready to close up shop. The catering vans are there. They're ready to take down all the barricades, and here you are, like.
I think this one is on Montrose. It's on Montrose
yeah.
Beach or somewhere, and you know, we go to the dock quite a bit. Ride our bikes up to the dock, which is on the Montrose Beach, and they're always doing these type of, you know, fundraisers for various charities and whatnot, runs and walks, and yeah, we get there like 11, and we get there and they're taking down all of the stuff, but then they're still stragglers
yeah.
walking the walk with their T-shirts and whatnot. I'm like, what do you do? Are you walking home? Are you still part of the thing? You got to pick up the pace
yeah,
a little bit.
Or if you're the organizer, maybe you create like a valve where you make the race kind of go in one direction back towards the city. So you don't even know it, but you're like, oh, the next thing you know,
that's
you're at
true.
Wilson. And you're like,
yeah.
I don't even know. This is not even
right
a race.
Right to the parking lot. Yeah.
It ends at the parking lot, right? Here you go. You win. They pay a makeshift ribbon. It's like, you win. Go back to your car. Get out of here. Also coming up, David Singer's going to join us. I am so happy to talk with him about imperfections. I feel like I'm a part of his film. A great film that was here in Chicago. And you'll love this, Pete, because today I was like, okay, so David's coming. He's going to update us on where we're at with this distribution, this great film that came out about a year ago. And I put in the Google, you know, docs that we use. And it popped up the first time we talked, and it was June 2015, 2 years ago. And the segment is all about how he just wrapped on this new film that he's working on. So David Singer will be in studio coming up here in a 9 o'clock hour. Stay with us. It's the download here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here. Coming up, we'll talk about a 5K to end homelessness, which is coming up in Montrose Harbor this weekend. But before we do that, I have to say, Dave Singer's in studio. And David, good to see you.
Nice to see you too.
And we have had, this will be our third or fourth installment of a conversation about your film, Imperfections. And I just told Pete, I was like, this feels like it's a Downloads film. Like we've been along for the ride and feels
fantastic.
Good.
Fantastic. We appreciate all the support you've thrown us.
But I want to read what this was the intro that I wrote in June of 2015, the first time we had you on. Ready? I just love my writing. Ready? You'll love this.
Oh, yeah.
In sports, we've all heard of the five-tool player. This is where an athlete has various skills on the field. In the arts, at least here in Chicago, we call something with multi-talent a Dave Singer.
Wow. I don't think that's true, but I'll totally take it.
David Singer's an accomplished musician. He's put out his own albums, toured the world. He's a composer, wrote the soundtrack for Steppenwolf's August Osage County. He's also an actor. Child actor like his brother who showed up on a Life cereal box, and he's a writer, short stories, screenplays. I wrote all
that
this stuff for you.
The Life cereal box got in there?
Yeah.
You went
and,
deep.
And of course, director, he directed the short film Advantage Weinberg and just wrapped on a feature-length comedy called Imperfections, which is shot here in Chicago. Now, that was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And we've talked about Imperfections on the program, and the last time we talked, it was right before the International Film Festival. I got to see it. It was great. And you were starting the festival circuit. David Singer, you gave us good news. What's the good news?
Well, the good news is that our movie got picked up for distribution.
Yes!
And it's coming out in movie theaters and everything else on July 28th, which is soon, which is 2 weeks from Friday. So it's going to be in movie theaters and cities around the country. And it'll also be on like all of your video on demand cable situations,
yeah, right.
And Amazon Prime and iTunes, and I assume it'll get beamed to your watch,
yeah,
or your refrigerator.
To my eyes.
To your, and it's not into your cerebral cortex for 2 more years. But
congratulations.
Thank you.
It's a big deal for a filmmaker, an independent filmmaker, and for everything that you've gone through to get to the festival circuits, to get distribution, to have it in the theater. It means a lot, and it takes a lot. So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So before we move on with the conversation, for those who may not listen every single night, Imperfection.
That's fine. There's nobody out there.
There's nobody like that. A feature film that you shot here in Chicago. Tell us about it.
It's a comedy caper movie that's set in Jewelers Row. It's about an out-of-work actress who gets a job working for her mother's boyfriend, who's a diamond importer, and she's trying to save money to move to Hollywood. This job that she gets is based on a job that a friend of mine had, which is those diamond guys, when they want to move stones from one place to another, some of them don't use security companies because the security companies get robbed all the time. They hire these young, beautiful women, and they stick a bunch of expensive gems in their pocket,
yeah,
and they say, be discreet and go to this other place. And I knew somebody who did this job, and it was insane.
That's so crazy
that they were sending her around with this. So this out-of-work actress is trying to save money to get to Hollywood. She gets this job as a courier. She gets her paycheck. She realizes it's never going to happen that way. So she conspires with the jeweler. Her mother is Mary Lou Henner. The jewelry owner is Ed Begley Jr. She conspires with Ed Begley's son to stage a fake robbery and keep the diamonds and split the money.
There you go.
So,
and hilarity ensues.
Hilarity, tension,
yeah,
twist, turns.
It's one of your earlier adopters of the dramedies. You know,
okay,
dramedies are all over the place now, but this feels like it was something. I mean, because it gets serious at points.
Well, I hope so. I mean, for me, the kind of movies that I love the most are movies that are not one thing or another. That they're funny and they're poignant and they're serious and kind of confusing, but they're also at the same time light. So it's not ideal for the niche marketing that controls the world right now, but it is the kind of movie that I respond to the most.
Was it hard for you, or it's probably easy, but I mean, what was the process like for the festivals? I mean, when you're not fitting into the one niche that everyone assumes, is it harder because then they got to watch the movie and say, okay, we'll take it, we're a comedy festival, a dramedy festival.
That wasn't the specific hurdle for us. The specific hurdle is that once you could make a movie with your phone, everybody in the world started making a movie. So I think Sundance, for example, showed 110 movies this year, and they said they got 14,000 submissions. So the only way you get through that separation of wheat from chaff is that you know a guy at a place.
Right.
We don't know anybody. We're just me and my brother from the flyover states. We don't know what we're doing. So we were fortunate that some influential people really responded to the movie, particularly Anthony Kaufman, who's a programmer at the Chicago International, and the Austin Film Festival, who had shown our short. And that was a launching pad for us. And then we went around, we've taken it. I've been to Bentonville, Arkansas, and everywhere in between showing the movie. And then somebody decided that America and the world needed to see it. And they're going to help us spread the word, as, you know, will all of the listeners to this program.
Well, I got to say, I mean, the first conversation we had was just about what it takes to make a film. We talked not just about the financing, but we talked about what it takes to put a schedule together, the editing, the shooting, putting a script together. The second conversation we had was just about, you know, getting ready for festival season to put it into circulation, as we just talked about. Now the conversation shifts to distribution. When you go to find a distributor as an independent filmmaker, I mean, is it sort of the idea of whoever will take it? I mean, are you looking specifically for a certain type of distributor? How does that process work?
Well, we were fortunate enough to have a handful of offers to sort through. And you do two things. I've used this analogy with friends before. It's kind of like buying a mattress. You know, like we go to one store and then you go to another store and the same mattress has a different name. So the whole time I sort of felt like whoever I spoke to last was the only person who knew what they were talking about.
Okay.
But what I did was I took all of these distributors who made us offers and I cold called like a dozen filmmakers that they had worked with. And because they took pity on me and recognized a fellow schlub.
It's a great idea.
They were like, all I asked was, did they pick up the phone when you called them? Did they do what they said they were going to do? Did they lie to you? Did they give you their checks when they were supposed to? And fortunately, we signed a deal with this company called Level 33, and they had a unanimous, those guys are great. People are going to like your movie or they're not, but these guys are on your team. So, and so far that's been absolutely.
So what do you have to do now? I mean, now as a filmmaker and you've been, this has consumed your life. I mean, you're at the point where now on the 28th, it's going to be in theaters.
Now I just sit back and count that money. No, it's not. It's not like that at all. I'm going to LA for the premiere with my brother, John, who's my partner in the movie. And then I'll come back here. The movie in Chicago is showing at the Logan Theater and at the Wilmette. And so I'll be doing Q&As at some theaters here and hawking it to every, you know, publication, website, guy with a megaphone I can get to talk about it.
I mean, at what point does it end? Like, is that the end when you're like, okay, we got it in theaters? I mean, or now there's the hustle to get it on, you know, on, you said it's already on demand.
The way that the industry has, let's not use the word collapsed, but let's say collapsed, is that it's available on all platforms at
now,
the same time.
Right.
So on the 28th, it'll be on iTunes and Amazon Prime and on your cable box and on...
So there's no real push for any DVD release because there is no DVD anymore.
But believe it or not, there is a DVD release. And I was like, are there people out there buying DVDs? And apparently there are.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. So that would be the next step to like sort of get it to DVD release.
Yes. And then, I mean, the important thing is just that I never have to watch it again sometime soon because I've seen it so many times. And it's like hearing, you know, when you hear your, you used to hear your voice on an answering machine? It's like that, but it like hundreds of times in rooms full of people. So
David Singer is my guest. His film Imperfections will be in, it'll be in theaters, both Wilmette and Logan Square, Logan Theater, starting on the 28th of July.
That's right. If I can say so, if you go to imperfectionsfilm.com, there's a trailer for the movie and you can see it. Or if you visit me at DS Arrows on Twitter, I will link you to places where you can see a trailer and decide, I need to see that movie immediately.
Now, as I mentioned at the top, you're a five-tool player. So we're going to sort of get at some of the other...
Film, music.
Music.
Pick up basketball.
That's right. And then two other.
Yeah,
that's five tool.
Right.
Oh, you got it. Nailed it.
Yeah.
But you're going to be sort of part of a show, the How to Be a Rock Critic show at Steppenwolf, the one-man show that's based on the life of Lester Bangs, is on stage now. You're going to be performing this weekend with...
It's next weekend.
Anyway, we'll hear some music.
Let's do it.
David Singer in studio. Stay with us. This is a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio. David Singer, filmmaker, musician, pickup basketball player, tennis player.
I'm a shoot first point guard. Yeah.
We need one.
Yeah, we need one. I'm like Cameron Payne, but I don't turn the ball over as much.
And you have better hair.
That's a
Payne's got good hair. He's got good hair. But David, you've got good hair.
Yeah, thank you.
David Singer and the film Imperfections out in theaters on July 28th. You're also performing at the Steppenwolf show, How to Be a Rock Critic. This is a great show that's on stage at the Steppenwolf one-man show at 20th, 21st, and 22nd.
That's right. So it's a show about the incredible, legendary rock critic Lester Bangs. And it's a one-man show by this guy, Eric Jensen, and his wife, Jessica Blank, that's been getting rave reviews across the country. And now it's at Steppenwolf. And the way it works is that the show plays for an hour or so, and then there's an intermission for people to get a bunch of drinks, and then they come back and they listen to my band and I slaughter a bunch of Lester Bangs adjacent material. So it won't be our stuff, it's
like covers of favorites of Lester's, right?
That's right.
All right, good. What are you gonna play for us now?
I thought I'm also playing next week. I mean, it's kind of annoying, but I have another show too. My band David Singer and the Sweet Science is playing with a terrific band, our friends of ours, called Elf Power from Athens, Georgia. We're playing at Beat Kitchen on Tuesday. So
look at you. You put
like the
all
end
in.
Of July, right. I'm really hitting on all
Real
cylinders.
Strong. Okay.
Early August is just going to be me at Superdog hanging.
What's the name of this one?
This is a new song. I'm going to play it for the first time on the air tonight.
All right.
And it's called Baker and I. And it's about, if I may, it's about a 65-year-old British woman who meets the love of her life at a BDSM retreat in Tampa, Florida, and then spends the rest of her life wondering about what might have been with this lost love.
Baker and I, David Singer.
Baker and I are untraditional. Baker is shy, and I'm a people person. But when you see him in his pretty please, the little yellow scabs all up his knees,
destabilizing your economies. You know, you know. Baker and I met while on holiday. Some Floridian owl I would rather not mention. I went to sate my curiosities. It was all crooked teeth and BVDs. Until my baker came right up to me and swallowed hello. You should have seen him in his pretty please. The little yellow scabs all up his knees, embodying the possibilities. You know, you know. I always knew I was something. I always knew there was something that love really needed and all of its suffering. You're not really bleeding. It's not really bleeding. Come on now, it's nothing. It was only sweet nothing. Baker and I don't talk much anymore. Once in a while, I'll still ring to say hello, hello. And we exchange the little niceties, some overly polite formalities. And everyone is a fatality, you'll know, you'll know. I can still see him in his pretty please. The little yellow scabs all up his knees. Yet here I am among the Pleiades. Where did he go? Where did he go? Where did he go? Where did he go?
Yeah, yeah. Talented guy. David Singer can do everything.
You're very kind. Thank you, David Justin, Singer. For supporting my many
I'm telling you, maybe one of the most talented guys I know. I mean, the movie Imperfections, the movie you guys put out, you and your brother, is top-notch. David Singer and the Sweet Science, as you just heard right there, tremendous. Going to be on stage at the Steppenwolf in sort of a double bill with How to Be a Rock Critic, the show about Lester Bangs, on stage through the 22nd. This will be the 20th, 21st, 22nd at Steppenwolf.
That's correct.
And then you're playing at Bee Kitchen on Tuesday night as well.
The 18th, yeah.
And then what?
And then Imperfections, everybody. July 28th, Tell a Friend, Catch the Fever.
What about after that? I mean, are you at the point now where you have to start the process again, like with film? Do you say, all right, it's time to start with the next
yes.
film? Really?
The only way that it was possible for us to pull this off, and it's us, because it's me and my brother John Singer, our friend Christina Verazza, who came in and as a producer and helped us navigate mm-hmm. some stuff, is to not think of it as this unbelievable monolith that no one could ever do.
Right.
We just knock down each thing. So it's like, okay, I have to write the script. Okay, now we have to raise the money. Okay, now we have to hire a crew, and now we have to raise more money, and then we have to get a cast, and then we have to find locations, then we have to shoot it, and then we have to edit it, and then I had to score it, and then we had to take it to film festivals, and then we had to sell it, and now it comes out. And now the next one is percolating. It sort of looks like you're about to climb a mountain, but you're looking at it from across the street.
Yeah, but I have to say, all of those moments, writing the script, finding money, editing, everything you just mentioned, every one of those is, and we all at home think the same way, is an opportunity to stop. It's an opportunity to say, all right, this is too hard. Or, all right, this is not going to happen. Let's move to something else. Yet you find a way to continue to execute chapter by chapter. And that's why I think that, yes, you have talent, but I also think you succeed because you look at those problems in front of you and you find a way to solve it. You don't give up.
Thank you. I'm willing to suspend my own disbelief that the impossible is possible.
I love it, man. Congratulations on the success of the movie and the process. And thanks for sharing it with us. Because this, I mean, truly has been a 2-year process of sharing along the way. And a lot
just for the record, I was already working on it for a year when that process started. But yeah, for sure.
Well, 2 years with us, but
2 years with
3 years
you.
3 years entirely.
Yeah. And I'm going to come back after this movie comes out and millions of people around the world see it. And it'll be the same, except I'll be wearing a monocle and I'll have a cigarette holder.
And, you know, that's not given because we may have to reevaluate our relationship just because now you're starting at the beginning. We don't know you. You're brand new.
Yeah, but
project.
I mean, now you're a Chicago institution.
Yeah, right. So yeah, so it's just a, you know, we'll just, our people will reach out to your people.
That's fine. I don't have people. You can call my daughter. She's 8. She's got good phone skills.
David Singer, the filmmaker of Imperfections. Go see the film, which is out on the 28th.
Imperfectionsfilm.com. Go look at the thing.
It'll be at the Logan Theater and the Wilmette Theater.
That's right.
On the 28th. He's also going to be on stage at Steppenwolf with his band, Sweet Science, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. That's the 20th, 21st, 22nd.
That's right. That show is great, and I highly recommend everybody come and see it.
David, great to see you. Thanks for coming in, Bo.
Great to see you, too. Thank you.
Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here. Well, coming up this weekend, Montrose Harbor will be the site for the 7th annual 5K Run Walk to End Homelessness. It's an annual event put on by a Safe Haven Foundation, a Chicago nonprofit that is designed to help break the cycle of addiction, poverty, and homelessness. The foundation was started back in 1994, and it's grown to have over 180 employees and an annual budget of $20 million. A Safe Haven Foundation is not your run-of-the-mill homeless shelter. No, this program offers transitional housing, and last year alone helped over 5,000 people with that housing and employment opportunities. One of the co-founders, Nellie Vasquez Roland, is in studio tonight. She's the co-founder and president of a Safe Haven Foundation. Nellie, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Hey, Justin. Thanks for having me.
All right. So let's first start by, I mean, there's news today. News today that Will County actually came out. They've been at a press conference and said that they had ended homelessness for veterans. That's amazing to think about, that there is no homeless vets in Will County at all. And you guys played a big part in this.
Well, you know, it is all about systems, you know, Justin. And what's wonderful about the process now, today, that exists with the partnership, that, especially that we have with the VA, is the fact when someone self-reports as being homeless and they showed up on the doorstep of someone, you know, someone in Joliet, I believe is where it was originally reported, they transferred him to Hines VA. Hines VA transferred him over to A Safe Haven. And he stated in his interview in that article that he came to our doorstep and said, I'm going to stay here as long as it takes until I get back on my feet. And the good news is A Safe Haven's designed to do exactly that. People are homeless for a lot of different reasons. And this gentleman was homeless for a long time. So there was a lot of damage that occurred throughout those years. And the good news is he was able to get treatment, education, job training, and back on his feet where he's now living in permanent housing. Now, he actually is a testimonial of a success story. The good news is this success story left A Safe Haven's doorstep and moved on to independence 5 years ago.
I mean, you do a lot of work around, you know, just homeless people, but homeless vets you also serve. And that has been from the federal government and a push down that they don't want any veterans to be homeless. After serving a country, you cannot come back to this country and not have a place to live. How, when you see that and you're part of that system, how important is it to fall in with the federal government's push and the others to say that veterans should not be without a home?
I'm 100% behind it, Justin. And, you know, I have sons, and I can't even imagine or fathom the thought that, you know, a son, any of our sons, all mothers, I think, feel the same way, that you would send them out to serve your country and that they would come home and have challenges, you know, transitioning back home, which, by the way, statistics show the vast majority of them do have challenges and need to go to a place where they can reestablish themselves mm-hmm. and reconnect back into society. And today, there was a report by the McCormick Foundation came out about 6, 7, or 8 months ago that said about 40% of the people coming home or veterans coming home actually don't have a place to stay. So as you can imagine, just right out of the gate, they don't know where they're going to live, and things start to become, you know, pretty slippery after that. And so, yes, absolutely. My husband's a military veteran. My father-in-law is a Korean War decorated veteran. So, you know, the issue of helping veterans as a primary and priority population absolutely is a must. And I think we all need to pitch in on doing that.
I mean,
that.
It really is. And it's something to think about. I mean, when you really think about it, like you just mentioned about sons, I mean, you're talking about young kids, 18 years old, who go in and they serve. And maybe they haven't really set up a life. Maybe their family structure is divided. They come back with not only wounds and the experience of serving sometimes in overseas, they come back to start their life, and it's not as easy as someone who comes out of college at 20, 21 to make that transition.
It isn't, because, you know, they come from a very structured environment as well, right? So they come from being in a structured environment and coming back into society and having no structure. You know, it's hard for them to get a grip. And the beauty of A Safe Haven, too, is the fact that, you know, we're all about structure. You know, we're all about helping them understand, you know, what it takes to, you know, have a roof over your head and three meals a day and, you know, do the things that you need to do every day that are going to, you know, lead you, you know, one step closer to independence. And we assess all of the root causes. They get a physical, they get education assessment, they get a workforce assessment in terms of what kind of skills that they learn, how can we transfer those skills. And, you know, ultimately the housing piece is an important piece in terms of how do we get them, right, you know, to their highest level of independence, but also to a place where they can live and afford to live there. We do a lot with budgeting and things like that. So once we help them do that, and one of the things that also helps them tremendously is they start to develop a network of new friends, new family, people that understand, you know, where they came from. You know, at any given time, we have at least 75 veterans living with us. So immediately there's a family for you, you know, the moment you walk in the door that understands where you're coming from. So we've got that peer-to-peer support. We've got the ability to, you know, connect them with civilian, you know, right, people, so that ultimately they do need to make that transition. And it's done with a very soft landing at A Safe Haven, as opposed to what I call a crash and burn and letting them just go out there and figure it out. Well, and doing that, I think, is really important.
You know, it's, I mean, as you mentioned, you know, you've had the relationship that the county or a government has with the VA, and the VA has with you a safe haven, and the way that there's a system in place for veterans. And we see that more and more, even from the federal government. We saw with the executive order that was just signed. That's what this is about. It's about creating a system so people don't fall through the cracks. How do you see that kind of system, if you will, playing out in a more general population where it's not just about veterans? That's about veterans, and you can see the A plus B equals C and figure out how to end homelessness like Will County stated today. How do you see that translating to general population of people who aren't veterans, just people who are homeless?
Well, Justin, I'm so glad you asked that question, because the way I look at it is we've been doing this process and setting up this system and really perfecting it over the years since 2010. And I see what we have done in coordination, you know, with federal agencies is really connect the dots for the military veterans and with all of our partners in mm-hmm. the community. We can actually look at that as a template and say, now that we've been able to prove the model works for the military veteran population, how do we actually translate that into the private sector? And I think we're at a pivotal moment in time right now. And I think those conversations need to be had, especially as the debate is going on about Medicaid. So we all know that we just got through a major budget crisis in, you know, in the state of Illinois, and the whole world is dealing with this issue of the rising cost of Medicaid, the rising cost of a fragmented, broken system like criminal justice, you know, and all of these associated costs that happen as consequences, which I believe lead to crime and violence. I mean, those are consequences of the fact that many of these people have been suffering from underlying issues that have not been dealt with. So I would love for us to really look at this holistically. Yeah. And let's look at this problem, and let's apply a comprehensive strategy that takes into account, you know, the broken criminal justice system, the opiate epidemic, you know, all of these things that we're dealing with. And how do we make sure that when someone shows up in the emergency room, for example, how do we get them into a detox program? And then after that, how do we release them to a place where they can really learn how to live in recovery long term? And that's where we come in.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. When you say, okay, you want to have a run walk to end homelessness, I think people hear that and they say, okay, that's one of the pie in the sky. It's hard to do. But when you break down and you say that a system like the one that works for VAs and veterans, and you're seeing with Will County today saying they, according to the census, they ended homelessness. Can you actually implement that? And I mean, you just mentioned somebody shows up at the emergency room and they say, I don't have a home and I have this problem. There are systems in place to put them into treatment center that takes them to a safe haven, that the system, it can mirror the same template that are used for veterans.
Absolutely. I mean, it's been proven. We've had, you know, thousands and thousands of military veterans.
So what's stopping? Is it just coordination? Is it resources? What's stopping the the society that we live in right now to recognize that and say, oh, that works. Let's do that.
You know, we've got a lot of systems that have been in place for a very long time, and it's really hard to break away from what's been there for a very long time. So I love that we're having this conversation because we really need to have it. I really think that, like I said, we're at a pivotal moment in time. And the decisions that are being made right now, today, in Washington, in the state of Illinois, in regards to the Medicaid crisis, we have to acknowledge the fact that over 40% of our costs are due to the fact that we have people that have behavioral health care problems that are poverty-stricken. Obviously, everybody on Medicaid is poverty-stricken, but for at least 40% of the people that are hitting up our emergency room and ending up in the criminal justice system, at least our behavioral health care issues. So if we just took that piece alone and designed this model for those people that showed up and said, you know, I really don't have a place to live.
Right.
For the highest risk, for the frequent flyers, even if we just did that, immediately we'll start to see a reduction in the costs of all of these systems that we have with Health and Human Services, with the Department of Corrections, with police protection. And the best part of that is we're going to turn people that have been a burden to our system into positive, productive members of society that can support themselves, take care of their kids, and ultimately pay taxes. You know, I don't know about you, but I don't know too many people are very happy about the fact that we have to pay more taxes right now and not having done a thing to change anything about the system that we have right now. So when I do talk about doing this 5K run to end homelessness. Yeah. I know it sounds like a lofty thing, but you know what? We are helping one person at a time. And for that person, we ended it. And we're doing it for thousands. So imagine if we're doing this without the help of you. And today, we have your help by what you're doing. So each and every one of us can play a role, you know, and use our talent, and our skills, and our gifts, you know, to either volunteer or donate or come out and run and walk or just show up. It is something that we hope people want to run and walk in. But, you know, what really matters is the fact that if we've got a narrative that we can help influence a new paradigm, it's going to take a lot of people to show up to really help our leaders understand that we really care about this
issue.
People
care about it, right.
And also, just to let you know, we have over 110 elected officials that signed on our honorary host committee to be a part of this run. So they were all required to play a part and either, you know, promote it, put a team together and come on out and be a part of it and be in the VIP tents, meet and greet the constituents. I think this is a bipartisan issue, you know, and at the end of the day, when people are in crisis, they're not thinking about politics. They're thinking about where their next meeting is going to come from.
Nelly Vasquez-Roland is my guest tonight. She's a co-founder and president of a Safe Haven Foundation, a foundation that's putting on the 7th annual 5K run walk to end homelessness this weekend at Montrose Harbor. You know, great point about being bipartisan, because automatically, because of the way that our system is set up politically, we rely on government for a lot of these resources. If there's going to be a homeless problem, we rely on government grants, research funding, whatever it might be. Even the shelters are funded. Do you see a future in which this societal problem, a problem that affects, as you just mentioned, you just eloquently laid out how it affects all of us to the point where if we're not taking care of this, it becomes the crime and the violence, everything we're seeing in our society. Is there a way for other places besides the government to get involved in creating this system you're talking about? Like we rely too much on the government to say, okay, or the sheriff's office or anyone anywhere along the line to say, this is our priority, we're going to do this. But with A Safe Haven and what you're doing with other places, is there a way to create systems outside of it that the private sector can rely or use to help with this issue?
Justin, you're amazing. 'Cause that is the missing link. Right? That is the missing link. So how do we connect with the private sector to play a role? And we're excited about the fact that we're starting to see the private sector that wants to give back and has their social responsibility missions out there, that they're starting to understand that not only is it the right thing to do, they must play a role and be in part of the solution. And at A Safe Haven, we have opportunities for them to come in and do volunteer activities, for them to come and do some pro bono work, you know, for whatever specialty, you know, business they have. And we also have the ability for them to donate, you know, and match their employees' gifts.
And
to
all
A
that
Safe
is
Haven.
Great. All that is awesome. And that's in the style that you do now. I mean, people can come out and help out and volunteer their time. But what I'm talking about is if you can draw a straight line, a correlation, if you will, mm-hmm. to an issue like homelessness and then the lack of opportunity or the lack of research or resources or even capital to help that problem, and it becomes rampant and it becomes a societal problem in the way that we're having more drugs, more crime, more unemployment, everything that we're trying to fix, as our government is trying to fix. Doesn't it seem like, you talked about paradigms, that we'd shift the paradigm and say, okay, this is something that we can see has an end game that's negative. So let's all come together and figure out a way to make that positive in the way that, you know, create systems to rehabilitate, create systems that are outside of the funding that comes from the city of Chicago or the state of Illinois or the federal government, because those places at the end of the day are looking at every possible way to cut corners, as we've seen over the last decade in our area. So my question is just that what you're onto, what you have worked on with the vet is something that I feel could be a model for a future in truly ending homelessness.
Everything we do provides an opportunity for the private sector to play a role. So one of the problems and the barriers that people that we were helping faced is that nobody would hire them. We can clean them up, we can get them into job training, we can do all that.
Right.
And what we realized is that no one's going to overlook the fact that they have a background, and no one's going to overlook they have bad credit, right? Or they had gaps in their resume,
right.
You know, for a few years,
sure.
In some cases, right? Or maybe they never worked. So about 20 years ago, you know, we started creating businesses. So I'm sitting here, for those of you that can't see us, right here on Michigan Avenue, and I'm looking outside the window here, and I'm looking at beautiful flower pots out there.
Yeah, right.
Now, I'm going to tell you that those flower pots, our company does that work.
Really?
A Safe Haven Landscaping Company does most of the work on Michigan Avenue and on Wacker Drive.
I did not know
and
that.
And people
okay.
don't realize that the people that are planting those beautiful flowers are getting their lives back on track. They're learning a work ethic. They're learning a job skill. They're getting paid to work. And they're learning how to manage their money. And it's very exciting to see the people admire these beautiful mediums on Michigan Avenue. But what they don't realize is that not only are planting flowers and allowing them to bloom, we're also helping people. And allowing them to bloom, you know. So it's very exciting stuff. So that landscaping company doesn't just do work for the city of Chicago, but a lot of businesses hire us to do their landscaping. A lot of the businesses on the street, the restaurants that have those flower pots outside, they're required by ordinance to have that. So A Safe Haven does a lot of that work as well.
Now,
so every time a business hires us, they're helping us put people back to work.
My last question just is about, you know, I mean, and I've had these conversations on the show, and I really appreciate you being here to continue them, because I'd love to have you back, because this is a great conversation. But at the end of the day, there always will be some sort of personal responsibility in this. And I would assume that there is some frustration and challenge in your work when someone doesn't want to rehabilitate or leaves and you don't get the success story that you were looking for, that at the end of the day, they maybe went back to being homeless, or they weren't able to get to the point where Safe Haven really wants them to go. Is that frustrating as a co-founder, someone who started this, that there always will be those kind of stories that also are attached to the mission?
Yeah, I'd be lying if I said we had 100% success. You know,
no one would expect that. No, yeah.
No, we wouldn't. But what I get to witness every day is, first of all, when people walk into A Safe Haven's doors, there's an understanding, and there's actually a little contract that they sign off on, that they've got to participate in, you know, following the rules. They've got to participate in being assessed in all the areas, like I said, physically, socially, economically, you know, and in the housing perspective, and socially. And then once we design a plan for them, they've got to follow through. And they know that they're getting a free roof over their head. They know they're getting 3 meals a day for free. I mean, everything's provided free of charge. As long as they're doing the footwork, we will stay with them. We will help them. We'll help their children. We'll give them the parenting skills. Anything they need while they're with us, we will help them, whether they're with us for a month or for, you know, 6 months. As long as they're making progress, we will stay with them. So they also understand how how hard it is to get into our program because we're always full. So they do value being there, but we do have people that don't always make it. They try and then they give up. And we don't give up on them. They give up on themselves when, you know, they don't participate. We do let them know that they're welcome to come back when they're ready, and that does happen. So it's just a matter of time before they hit rock bottom and they show up and they say, okay, I wasn't ready last time, but now I am. So we'll keep taking them as long as they understand, you know, that there's that agreement. And as long as they live up to it, we'll stay with
them. Well, Nellie, I'd love to have you back. We could talk more about this issue because I do truly think that there's – and what you guys are doing, there's something that society should pay attention to and really looks like an opportunity to shift the paradigm and buy in. Nellie Vasquez Roland is the co-founder and president of A Safe Haven Foundation. The 7th annual 5K run walk to end homelessness is this weekend at Montrose Harbor. You can find it online. Nellie, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Justin.
It's time for Swap Meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Or it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman.
And Greg Flam.
Hello, let's
do it.
Hey,
let's do it. It's the Swap Meet here, sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market, 312-981-7200. This, of course, our segment we do every Wednesday night here on The Download, where we essentially evaluate your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk. What you got in the attic, maybe in the basement in the Lake County area.
Right.
May not be there anymore, unfortunately. I'm sorry for that.
Yeah.
Greg, great silence. To see you. Yeah, right. Moment of silence for the
baseball
junk,
collection. Yeah.
The baseball collections that are underwater. Greg Flam, good to see you, buddy.
Thank you for having me. Fun.
At DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. Do you know the deal? You can give us a call. You can text with what you have. What do you want to brag about? And then Greg will tell you what it's worth. 312-981-7200. As always, you bring stuff in to start off the conversation, and you are on a roll with these huge Bears posters.
Well, I'm keeping my word with the Bears poster a week until I run out. I've got about
this
five
one
more.
Is one of my favorites.
Yeah, this one is called Back with a Vengeance, and it was put out. It was, you know, Chevrolet and WGN put out this poster in 1987. And
it's the 85 Bears 2 years later.
Mm-hmm.
They're all walking at us.
Yep.
There's a bunch of lightning in the background.
Yes.
And my favorite part is they're all in uniform. They're dirtied up. Mm-hmm. And they are in capes.
Yes.
They are all wearing capes.
Yes. I guess that's a superhero thing they were going for or something.
Yeah. It feels much, much more like Phantom of the Opera than superhero. But
it,
I guess that's maybe not what they were going for.
Yep.
But it is great because it's got Hampton, Bortz, Dent, Otis, McMichael, Jimbo Covert, Dennis McKinnon, Wilbur Marshall, that's Jay Hildenberg, Todd Bell, and I can't say that, is that Keith Van Horn?
Keith
in the
Van
back?
Horn, yep.
No Peyton, no McMahon.
Right, no,
no Singletary.
Quarterbacks.
Yeah, they just kind of skipped over the stars.
Yep.
Well, but
2 years later, yeah.
This is amazing.
But still, yeah, you see how the fever was still at that pitch.
You see what they would look like in capes.
Yeah, I mean, 2 years later, I mean, even to this day, now they're doing the 70, you know, and they're still using 85 Bears. But no, it's great. And, you know, this isn't one of the higher ones as far as value. It's about probably a $15 poster online.
Well, okay, but that's bogus.
Yeah,
it should be more.
Right.
I mean, we've seen Junkyard Dogs, which you've got to come across.
Black and Blues Brothers, yeah.
Yeah, right. You have to come across. Maybe we haven't seen the Junkyard Dogs one, the one where they're like in chains.
Yeah,
like
I don't think I brought that one.
You got to find that one.
Yep.
And then there's the Miami Vice ripoff with McMahon and Peyton.
Peyton, yep.
That
Crockett one's harder to find. You have to get that one online. I hardly see that one at homes, you know, at estate sales or garage sales.
That's because no one would ever give it up.
Right.
If I had a family member who you know, God hope it doesn't happen, passes on, and they had a Miami Heat or Miami Vice Heat, whatever it was, with Peyton and McMahon, I'd be like, roll it up. Put it on a rubber band. This is not going in the estate sale. It's coming.
I think that one like just hung on the walls for so long to where something like last night happened, where there was a flood or some kind of thing, where you know, until it finally just had the end. You know.
Well, okay. So you've got the Bears poster, which is pretty awesome. What else you got?
Well, I'm 52, so I grew up with Zoom and Electric Company and stuff like that, and it's they're kind of rare, but the Zoom records are kind of rare. And Pete's
Zoom
taking pictures.
Records.
Yeah, by WTTW Channel 11.
Yeah.
Zoom records. But this one, what makes it even more rare is there's the posters actually included.
So
it's a box set, and there's like a poster book, and you'll probably recognize this more.
So what is it? What I mean, yeah.
So they were kids, out of Boston, Mass. They always had the address to send in for something. But yeah, it was.
So they made original albums from the stuff,
and then they made albums from the show. Yeah, so they were like they became personalities from that show that made albums. And anyway, like I said, I'm showing my age. I'm sure there's people out there that know exactly, you know, what's going on when I say Zoom. And they had the song, and everybody knew it. They, you know, there was all these different segments that they did that just caught on with different type of just making something.
How great is it to be able to come across stuff from your childhood like that?
Yeah, and that was the day when there was, like, you know, 7 TV channels. So, you know, like I said, people 50 and older are going to really know what this is.
Not sure it beats Bears and Capes.
Right.
But still.
Definitely not, right. Yeah, go with it definitely doesn't beat it. And then the other one I just came across, kind of rare, was a Marx Disneyville, like tin lithograph,
the
train. It actually works, but what it is missing, as is, it's about a $40 item. If it had, there's a metal arm that comes out where there's Mickey in an airplane that goes around with the
Mickey
train.
Mickey Mouse Express.
Yeah, if that was on there, it'd be about a $175, $200 item. But because it's missing that, but you could see. Train actually goes around when you crank that. If it was flat, you would see that. But yeah, so anyway,
obviously it worked.
Got
at
stuck
home.
In the ride. It sure did. Yeah, that's the
I swear it worked
right.
At,
that's
worked
how it is
I
when you get
it,
on the air, right?
All right, 312-981-7200. We're playing the swap meet tonight. Jim's on the line. We got others. We also got some texts coming in. All right, so let's do this. We'll take our first break. We'll come back. We'll start with Jim. And we will get ready for another rousing night of listening to what you have in your attic, what collectibles, what memorabilia. We'll evaluate your junk. Greg Flam is here. Stay with us. All right, 312-981-7200. We're playing the Swap Meet, sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. Greg Flam at DuPage Picker in studio. You can get at DuPage Picker Facebook and Twitter. Got some great people on the line.
Yep.
Got some text coming in, so let's get to it. Let's start the swap meet with Jim. Jim, what do you want to brag about tonight?
Hey, first off, great show, guys.
Thank you.
I happened to, a business was closing down, and I did a little dumpster diving, and I said, let me see. Picked up a box, was sealed, opened it up, and there was Aurora models of the 2001 Space Odyssey.
Wow.
All sealed. There's 20 of them in this box.
Oh, wow.
Whatever. And it's like, what do I got here? I don't, you know, all sealed.
You have them still?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I got the whole case. I don't know. I don't think there's any damage. I didn't want to open them, you know.
Right. Definitely do not open them.
Yeah, like they're wrapped and sealed, but I don't know, something like that.
Right, they're rare enough opened. They're going for 20 to 50 opened, so you've got them sealed. I'm thinking that you've got at least...
For the Smithsonian or what?
No, but probably 150 to 250 each, probably, is what
really?
You got there. Yeah, so yeah, you've got a nice
collection. I love, Jim,
collection.
I love that Greg's question is about, is it still sealed? My question is, how deep did you get in the dumpster? Did you get
right.
full body in there?
No. I went. It was stuff just piled up in the top.
Okay.
I'm going to go back and check and see if there's anything more. You know, was just like a thing like, well, I wonder what, and I just grabbed the sealed box. And I said, okay.
Yeah, well, you probably have a nice Disney vacation right there in that
there
box.
You go.
Sell
wow.
that and go
Look
to
at
Disney.
That.
Well, right, I'll tell you what, if that works out, I don't know, go online with them, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you know, find someone who knows what they're doing with toys on eBay if you're doing that, or if you want to write me through Facebook, I can, you know, try to help you with that if you want. It's up
All
to
right.
you.
If All I right. do that, you guys get you each get one as a present.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. I would much rather have the Disney ears, like the hat, you get when you go to that
really?
Disney vacation. So. All right, thanks, Jim.
All right, man.
All right, thanks for calling.
Or maybe just a churro from Disneyland.
Right.
That's about what that... let's go to Mary. Mary, what do you want to brag about, Mary?
Hi. I have baseball uniform from the Dodgers when they were still on the East Coast.
Okay.
And it's dated 1951, and it's the coach's costume.
Okay. That's what, yeah.
The
that's
coach's costume.
I was going to ask if he had a name on it or not.
It just says coach?
It doesn't have a name. It just says number. Coach in 1951. And it's embroidered on it. And it's a lovely job. And the fabric is like a nice worsted wool.
Wow.
So is it worth anything?
It definitely is. And it's something that I can't really even appraise. It's going to be in the probably 600 to 1500 minimum, depending, you know, what an auction could bring with that.
Yeah, you got to go through the sports guys.
Yeah, you got to get that evaluated and graded and everything. So I would, but I want to tell you that I think it's worth doing that. So I would pursue that. Unless you're going to keep it and you're fine with it, then, you know, but if you're going to sell it, definitely go through the process of that because it's big enough money to do that.
No, my kids have been wearing it for Halloween costumes.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
but do they go as like Brooklyn Dodgers? That's what their costume is?
Okay.
Yeah.
So have they like been washed and shrunk over the years? I mean, if they fit your kids, because I, you know,
no, they were just big on the kids. You know, it was one of those things.
Right.
Where it's too cold to wear your real costume, so this will fit over your coat, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Well, regardless, it's still worth quite a bit of money if you still want to pursue that.
You should try to give it to Walter Jacobson, because Walter Jacobson came on the show when the Cubs were winning the World Series, and he talked about being a bat boy for the 19... What was it, Pete? It was like maybe the late 50s, mid-50s, and he had... I say find that tape online. There's a great segment of Walter talking about being a bat boy and, like, trying to trick the other team and lying, and there's Brooklyn Dodgers stuff, and there's really great convo with him being open about how tough that job was of being a, because he would steal the other team's signs and stuff like that.
Nice.
Anyway.
Oh, a whole nother side to Walter we didn't know about.
Yeah, it's a really good convo. You should check it out. Thanks, Mary.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. Let's go to, let's keep going. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Val. Val, what do you want to brag about, Val?
Well, I have to say something first.
Okay.
Well, my name is Zoom, and I come from the moon.
See?
I came down to Earth just to sing you this tune. Right?
Right. And can you sing the theme song for Zoom?
I can't remember that. That's the only one that's.
See, I'm not going to do it.
You can do it, Greg.
I'm not going to do it.
Gosh, I wish I knew.
But yeah, it was a big thing.
I know of it. It's not my generation, and I feel like I don't know. I know of the show, but I don't think I've ever seen it.
Yeah, it was a big deal because, like I said, there weren't that many channels, so that was part of your Saturday morning, or even I think it was on daily. You know,
really?
I think it was like an after school type of thing, like
right.
At three o'clock or something.
Yeah, it was right in with electric company Zoom. But yeah,
I know electric company. All right, Val, what do you got?
Okay. While I was on hold, I thought of a few other things. I have some unusual record type things. Okay. The thing that initially brought to my mind was back in the 70s, Burger King had some kind of a promotion where they sold 45.
Right.
And I have a 45 that's got like England Dan and John Forcoli and Firefall or something like that on it.
Is it just the one group, or I think they did three songs on one or something like, or three groups on one. But yeah, you're right, my wheelhouse. They're called Flex Records, and I collect those. So, and they're not worth that much, but they're just fun to collect. A lot of times they would be like on the back of a cereal box. You cut it out, you know, the cardboard, and you have to like put a penny on it to weigh it down while you play it. Sometimes, like you said, Burger King would give them out. McDonald's has done it. Last week we had KFC with Walter Payton did one. And I like collecting those because they're really odd and they're great conversation pieces. And but the one you have is probably between $2 and $10. It's not worth that much.
Okay, that's kind of cool.
Do you have any others?
I have in the 80s, I worked at a radio station. So I have a lot of promotional copies of albums
right
and 45s.
Yeah.
And they will say promotional copies, like both sides of the same song.
Right.
Are any of those worth anything?
They definitely are. I mean, I've recently sold a Doors radio promotion 45 for about $60, just the 45. It was promotional for radio. And some of them can get more than that. I would definitely check into those. You can easily look them up. Just when you do look them up, make sure you click on sold, you know, versions of it, not what people are asking.
Val, can I ask, where were you working? What radio station?
WFYR.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
3.5.
Yep. That was right before my Q101 days, before it even went alternative. It was Murphy in the Morning and all that. I was listening to FYI.
We were competitive with
I listened to both of those.
We had Jeff and Jer and C.K. Cooper and Bob Barnes-Watts. So they're all they're all still friends of mine.
You should write a book about radio in the 80s. 80s radio, that's what it would be called. I'd read it.
Yep.
All right, Val, thank you. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good one.
You too. 312-981-7200. Let's hit Marianne up. Marianne, what do you want to brag about, Marianne?
Well, I have a letter from August 9th, 1933, and the original envelope with the 3 cents postage. And it's from the St. Louis American League Baseball Company. It was addressed to my aunt in Thorpe, Wisconsin, and it's signed by Rogers Hornsby.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Rogers Hornsby, man, he had a – I remember this, my amateur days of understanding baseball stats. He had a huge stat for a long time. Maybe it was like number one homers or something like that. All these guys that kind of ripped them off. Started getting 80s and 90s. But, yeah, that's a big deal. I would think it's a big deal, but what do I know, Greg?
Well, I have found a type letter signed by him.
It is a type letter.
Yeah, someone is asking crazy money. They're asking over $4,000 for it. But that's what they're asking.
That's what they're asking.
So
they can ask whatever they want.
Right, and I'm trying to see if any sold, but that's such a rare item that I'm probably not going to find any sold, but I am checking for you. Just his signature has gone for $750, so that's a good sign. So it could be worth, you know, between $2,000 and $4,000.
Wow!
If you have it checked out.
Do I go to get?
You
got
to go to like sports memorabilia. Place.
Yeah, just Google authentication, whatever it is, for sports memorabilia, and you'll get two or three companies, and you'll probably have to pay like a service fee of anywhere from $15 to $20, and you'll send it into them. They'll grade it. They'll seal it, send it back to you, and go from there.
Okay. Now, does it help that I have the original envelope and it's slit on the side so that...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'll want to send all that in.
All that in.
Yeah, and make sure you, like, insure it get a signature required.
It's going to be worth that kind of money. Just pay attention.
Yeah.
Don't be sending
And, you know, like, you talk about the posters and stuff like that. Like, we were in the car when you first came on. I couldn't wait to get home, and my husband's upstairs bringing down armloads of posters. I mean armloads, because we were doing just what you said. We were at my daughter's house because of
the flooding.
I mean, like, we've got the back with the vengeance.
That's the one they got here. Yeah.
Yeah, and as if you listened last week, the Super Bowl ones would like that say actual Super Bowl 20 or have the XX logo, Super Bowl logo. Those are commanding the most out of the Bears posters.
And Marianne, isn't it crazy? They're all wearing capes in that poster. It blows my mind. I don't understand the fashion choice, but
yeah, and I have a whole set that Sears put out that was a very limited edition. I had a brother-in-law who worked for Sears.
Wow, I don't see the Sears. It's a Bears poster by Sears?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't see those. So if you want to send a picture via Facebook to me, that'd be great.
Okay, and what is your – where would
at
I send
DuPage,
that to?
DuPage Picker.
DuPage
Picker.
Yep.
On Facebook.
All right, thanks, Marianne.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books. Or silverware, as long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman.
And Greg Flam.
It's me.
That's right. 312-981-7200. Swap Meet sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. The lines are lit up. We've got a lot of stuff to get to, as well as some texts as well. My favorite time. This is my favorite time of the week. So many great people to talk to, learn about what they are collecting, what their memorabilia is. Let's go to Linda. Linda, what do you want to brag about, Linda?
Oh, hi, Justin and Greg. I have a 1975 yellow men's Schwinn bike.
Okay.
Like new. It's got the real skinny tires. It's a 10-speed.
Is it like what they call the banana seat? Look, you know, it's like a longer seat.
No, I have a 1980 little boy's Schwinn banana seat.
Yeah.
Schwinn, though.
Okay. Yeah.
What do old bike. What do old bikes go for?
I mean, they're big money. It depends.
They are?
It depends on the model, though, and obviously condition. But yeah. Just looking up 1975 yellow Schwinn because I didn't have the model. I find a couple going for 150. I would guess, you know, they could be higher, you know, in the 300s, 400s minimum. Like I said, it all depends on condition. Does it look like it's in great shape? Any rust? Yeah, what's going on?
No, they're both in great shape. But somebody, where do I find the model number? Do you know?
Good question. Usually it's, you know, where the chain, where the pedals are on that metal rail there. It will say like Stingray or, you know.
Yeah, that's what it is a Stingray Banana Schwinn.
Okay.
Is that worth very much to take?
Yeah, the one I found was that banana model that and that was 150.
It's probably not worth much. Think about like a new Trek bike is probably going to run you about $1,000.
Right.
So you're only getting 150, 200 from it. But I wonder if you could sell it to a hipster, a bike messenger downtown who's like, look at my cool 1975 yellow bike. You know what I mean? Like it becomes ironic.
Yeah. No, I would say you're in the 150 to 350 range with that.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
No problem. Thanks for listening.
Linda? Love WGN.
No, thanks.
Well, thank you. We love you. All right, 312-981-7200. Let's go to Stephanie. Stephanie, what would you like to brag about tonight?
Well, actually, I might even want to complain about it.
Okay.
I'd say about 30 years ago, I started collecting elephants.
Okay.
And I've had them now. I put them away for the last 15, 20 years. I've got two boxes of all different kind of elephants, naturally all with the trunks up. But what I really think is very interesting, I have two that stand up on the floor.
Okay.
I don't know if it's iron or brass, real heavy. Mm. Beautiful, beautiful with their trunks up. And I don't know if they'd be worth anything. Then I also have a black wood table that's got three, around the legs of the table, it's got three black elephants with their white tusks. Well, it's nice. It was at the time I loved the collection.
Right.
Yeah. Now I'm 90 years old.
So how did, if I can ask, like, did someone just happen to see, oh, you had one elephant, so they, she must like elephants, and then every Christmas and every birthday you got an elephant? Is that how that happened, or how did that happen?
And my husband, any time he went out, he'd bring me back an elephant.
Yep. That's,
oh, my God.
You have to be careful what you say, what you like, because then you end up like with a lot of it. But just for the listeners, she kept mentioning trunks up, and that's a good luck thing. If it trunks up, it brings good luck. Yeah.
I've got a little, you'll like this, Stephanie. I've got a wooden painted elephant right by my window, trunk up for good luck in my
house.
Honestly,
well, God bless you. I guess it's working for you, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. I don't know about that, but yeah.
Good. God bless you.
You know, obviously, you know, there's value there. It's just there's so many of them, and I don't have brand names or things like that to look up each one. But, yeah, I'm sure there's a few of them that are worth quite a bit.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Stephanie.
Okay, yeah, and have a nice night.
Thank you.
You too. Thanks for calling. Let's keep it going. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Ulysses. Great name, Ulysses. What do you want to brag about?
Yes. Hi.
Hi. Hi there.
Fine, how are you? I have postcards. They have not been used, and they are still in the box. The 3x5 color postcards of all the baseball stadiums, the original baseball stadiums of the teams in the nation.
Okay.
Wow.
Are they perhaps 1988 or what years? Or did you collect each one or did you buy them like as a set?
No. They was all in a box. I just bought them in a box. They were discontinued. I collect stamps.
Okay.
And I used to go to the post office, and I went to one in Blue Island. There was a lady told me there's a lot of old stuff back in the vault.
Okay.
And so she goes back there and bring out all these boxes of a lot of old stuff and old stamps that were never sold. And as a result, when they were discontinued and made new stamps, because people didn't actually buy them, and as a result, she just sold them to me for a very small price. In fact, less than half the actual.
Pocketed the change.
Right.
And also, I have the original LPs, wax of the inauguration speeches for Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, and a lot of those other guys.
Wow.
They've never been used.
Yeah, wax and LPs definitely have value. But as far as the postcards, it'd be hard to, you know, to give you an idea, because it sounds like they were collected individually and now they're a collection, as you say. But yeah, I'm going to guess hundreds of dollars on that, you know, $200 to $400 to start. Because even the 1988 set of 20 is going for about, you know, $20. Obviously, it's 1988. But
oh, they were long before 1988.
Right. So I'm thinking, you know, if they're not written on and they're in great shape, you're looking at $200 to $400 or more.
They have not even been touched other than by me, because when I got some, they were sealed in a box.
Wow.
And I just picked some of them out and looked at them, and they weren't ever sent out as a postcard to persons. Because, see, these are the kinds that you just write a note, put your address on it, and then
sure.
put a stamp on it and send it to a friend or relative
exactly.
of a federal. So these have never been used.
What else is in that box is what I'm curious
yeah,
about.
Right.
You know,
What else
was in the box that was with the postcards?
Just the postcard sealed,
oh, okay.
all stacked and sealed in the box.
Oh,
that's 3x5 postcard size, and I also have Lady Di stamps.
Okay, well, you should definitely get someone to help you look that stuff up. If you do want to sell it, you know, just be careful. Have someone help you do that.
Very well.
All right, thanks, Ulysses.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. I love the awesome descriptor of what a postcard is. In there, like, he went to
you
great lengths
it,
to
yep.
let us know, and then
yep.
there's probably a lot of younger listeners like, "What's a postcard?"
Right, and that's true. Yeah,
that's true.
I'm in the post office every day, and I'm thinking, you know, some people don't even write a letter anymore. They don't even know how to address an envelope. You know?
Oh, I know. I feel for my son who's 9. I have a feeling he's gonna be like, "What do you do? How do you do this?
And
where do I hit send?"
In cursive writing. Yeah.
Right,
so what's
don't
that?
Teach it anymore. All right, Brian. Brian, what do you want to brag about, Brian?
Hey, how you doing, fellas?
Hi
there,
man.
You hear me okay?
Yep, go ahead.
First of all, when you got this job, I was a little suspect,
mm-hmm.
and I listened constantly to you.
Okay.
And thank you. Thank you for your contribution to mankind.
Okay.
Oh, that's nice, man.
It's fun.
You come up with these quirky things. The news is the best.
Okay.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks.
When you read the news and you do it quick, I'm like, I got the news. I'm good.
There you
go.
I get that's right. That's the idea. That's called the carry out. That's the whole idea, right?
Yep.
Little snippets, and then I put a little joke on there, and we move to the next thing.
Right. And who is the band at the end? That's the na 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 na.
It's a artist named Action Bronson. And,
very good.
Yeah, and featuring Chance the Rapper as well.
Okay.
All right. What do you got, Brian? What do you want to brag about? Thanks for the compliments for the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm not trying to throw compliments so you listen to me. I'm just doing it for a reason.
I appreciate it. I understand.
Yeah, I know how that works. I've got a 2x3 of Wrigley Field.
Okay.
Okay? It's not a painting. It's on canvas. It's not framed, but it is framed with small wooden particle pieces. And it's canvas, but it's in black and white. I've asked hundreds of people, I said, what year is this? What year? And they say 1942 to 45.
Okay.
And it shows that they were going to the World Series, not the World Series, but the National Championship. And it has what's included on it is it has the brewery behind it with the three stacks where the fire department is right now.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
And people look at that and they're like, well, where did you get this? I said, well, it was in my sister's basement. And I said, well, she says, do you want this? I said, of course I do. I'm a Cub fan.
Right,
I don't really
right.
want to get rid of it, but I don't know if there's nothing to it. There's nothing signed. It's nothing fabulous. But, I mean,
I love that stuff, though.
Yeah, if you could send us a picture, that would definitely help. It sounds very cool, and it's very rare on top of it, so I'm kind of stumped. But when you say black and white, it's not obviously a black and white photo, but you're saying these black and white speckles of some kind on a canvas?
Well, no, it looks painted, but it's not. It's a picture, but it's on a canvas.
Okay.
What they're portraying in the picture is when the people would go suit and tie, just like you get on a plane years ago, and they'd show up, and the cars are 1942 to 45, the old Fords in front of the place, and
okay.
it's kind of a like a for lack of a better word, like a spectacle. You look at it and say, my God.
Yeah, it'd be great if I could see that. I can't, but I'm sure it's definitely worth something. It's just giving you a proper appraisal.
And on the wall, right?
Yeah, if you could send it to Page Picker at Facebook or here, you know, text us to us.
312-981-7200 accepts text as well. Brian, you know what's awesome? Have you been to Wrigley Field lately?
Oh, yes.
Like in the last year, like in this season? Have you been there this season?
If I was there for the championship series last year.
Even from that to now, on the 4th of July, my friend from who I used to be, we used to be roommates in college, and we lived up in Ravenswood, right? And he's back in with his family from New York, and we wanted to hit the slot, and he wanted to show his kids Wrigley Field. And so that we drove past, and we went up Sheffield, and we came around on Waveland right in front of that, the fire station you're talking about. And they have built a hotel there in where the parking lot was for the players and where the Yum Yum Donuts was that it makes the whole block look entirely different. I mean, it looks so, I mean, I couldn't believe it. I was like, I felt like my dad when he comes back into town. He's like, that used to be a Woolworths. Yeah. Like I was doing that to my friend being like, that was a McDonald's. Like
McDonald's,
you would be amazed at the structures they put in Wrigleyville in such a short amount of time. It's mind boggling.
Yeah, it was also a burger joint back when my first ball game when I was 8 years old. And the firehouse, I had to stop in there with my cousin, Steve Norman. And he's a fireman out in Barrington. And I said, Steven, I need to use the bathroom. Before we get into the ballpark, because it was so crowded, and we're going to the, you know, we're in the playoffs. They said, we got to win this, and we're playing the Dodgers. Okay. And so I was chatting with the guys, and I used to look at that every day on TV watching that firehouse. And I got in there, and I'm like, hello, fellas. Hi, girls. Hi, guys. Can I use your bathroom, please? And he's like, yeah, no problem.
There you go.
Nice.
I could completely understand where you're coming from. Yeah,
it's cool, and it's weird, and it's the new future of Wrigleyville. But anyway, we got to move on. Brian, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Wait, one last thing.
Okay.
Did you hear that they will not give the Cub the right to have the All-Star game unless they replace the dugout for the incoming team?
Oh, they want to. You mean they want to do on the visitor side? Like,
did they have to update that, or are they not?
Yeah.
They will not.
There's always some sort of concessions.
Yeah, I haven't heard that.
But I haven't heard. But I wouldn't be surprised because I've heard rumors about the visitors' clubhouse and the visitors' dugout. It's not as good as the home side.
I've been down there. I was down there with Mark Graves. My sister's a surgeon. She used to show up from Northwestern. We'd go down there after games. And she says, come on down here because we have to make sure these guys are – make sure they're not broken. My brother, the whole bit. And, it was a hole in the wall.
Wow. Probably still is. All right. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.
Hey, God bless you.
Take care. All right. Let's keep going. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Mike. Mike, what do you got? What do you want to brag about, Mike?
Hey, I have an 8x10 Olympic flag with the rings.
Okay.
And I think it came from the post office or something. It was it's pretty big, but I had Jim Craig sign it.
Okay.
And he didn't sign it to me personally, to my name, but I had him sign it to America's greatest hockey fan.
Oh, nice.
That's awesome.
What kind of value you think you got on that?
Well, you were smart not having him put your name on it, because if you want to sell it, that gives you more value than it had your name, so that was good. I'm trying to find an actual Olympic flag signed. There's one guy's asking $4,000 for one, but he's got it nicely displayed in a frame with tickets and things like that. I'd have to guess starting at $1,000, I would think, because obviously that, being hockey, that would be, more than some of the other sports. So if you're going to sell it, like I said before, have it checked out, and also presentation matters too, as far as how much you'll get for it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike, for calling.
Yeah.
That's good. The world's greatest hockey fan.
Yep.
I have a funny story. I might have told this one on the show, but what was the San Diego Padres pitcher in the 80s? Eric Schau? Was it Schau? He died, right?
I don't know.
Anyway, we were in San Diego. My grandparents lived in San Diego, right? And this was the year that Dawson was going to win the MVP. If you remember in that year, he hit a home run off of Schau, and then the next time up, he got pegged in the face.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Remember that? So later that season, we were out visiting the grandparents in San Diego, and we went to a game where the Cubs, it wasn't even the Cubs, like the Reds, Eric Davis and the Reds were at San Diego, but we just went to watch a game. And before the game, we went down there, and they were signing autographs. Eric Schau was signing autographs. And he comes up, you know, it comes up to my time, I have a program or something. And my dad goes, "Hey, Eric, you guys, can you sign something?" He goes, "Yeah, what's your name?" And my dad goes, "His name's Andre." And the guy goes, "Andre?" And he goes, "That's your name?" He goes, "Yeah, Andre Dawson, you beep."
Oh, my God.
And I was like, "Oh, dad, I can't believe him." The guy just goes, "Whatever." Like, he's this is a moment where I'm like, wow, that's so. So at least he didn't. I like World's Best Hockey Fan. That's even better.
You haven't told that story.
I have not told that story.
Just for the record.
That's such a good one, though, right? It really is. Let's go to Greg. Greg, you're on the Swap Meet. What do you want to brag about?
1983 Mazda RX-7.
A car?
Oh, wow.
Yes.
We're doing cars now?
Yep. Moved on to cars.
I love it. We're doing cars. We turn into car talk. Me and you, we're car talk.
Okay, well, I'm not a car guy, but I do know that year in that car, I've heard it in circles as being, you know, like a holy grail.
Why?
Type. Yeah, it's just something with that car.
The Mazda 1983 Mazda RX-7?
Yep. And I'm looking it up right now, and I will get you some numbers here.
What do you mean? What makes the car, Greg, what makes that car so special?
It has the rotary engine, and supposedly could redline that thing all day without it blowing.
Wow. I am getting you some numbers right now.
That's such a car thing to say. You could redline that thing without all day without blowing.
Yeah, it looks like average is about 5,000, between 3,000 and 5,000, and that's like
Are
almost
you looking
any
on eBay
condition.
For that?
Yeah, they're all over eBay. I mean, there has to be a dozen that have sold within the last.
That's hilarious.
You know, like 4 months. 3 months, a dozen have sold. So it's definitely a popular model in a car. So he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, it still doesn't seem like enough, but all right. Thanks, Greg. Thanks for the
call,
buddy.
Thank you.
Now we're doing cars.
Right.
I love it.
Well, that's a swap meet for you.
There you go. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Susie. Susie, what do you want to brag about, Susie?
Hi. I actually just wanted to talk about the fact that I gave my husband a Joe Madden signed jersey.
Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's new. So, I mean, how are those? Are those going for anything at this point? I mean, a year after the World Champ or World Series?
Yeah, we'll see in a second here what it's going for.
Joe Madden, how'd you get it signed?
So I actually won it at Big Poppy's Golf Classic.
Okay.
At his event he had. So I won it at an auction.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're going for 200 to 300. There's one here as low as 80. So 80 to 300, depending. Again, it's presentation. Some are framed, some are not.
Huh.
So I don't have it framed yet. So should I get it framed?
Does that make it more?
It's only probably going to change the value another $75, maybe.
Which
so
is what it will cost to frame.
Yeah, to frame it. So you could probably, you know, if you're looking for the fast nickel.
I think I'll wait. Cause
yeah,
I love
hold on
Joe
to it.
Too much.
Yeah,
I would wait too.
It's
on
too
it.
Early. Thanks, Susie.
I love it. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, let's keep going here. Running out of time. We got about 2 minutes left. Let's go to Mitch. Mitch, what do you want to brag about, Mitch?
Well, a long time ago, in the 70s, my mother took a vacation in San Francisco, and she did a tour of Alcatraz.
Wow.
And the guy that headed the tour, she went to high school in grade school with.
What?
And they were really good friends. And he ended up giving her this one mirror. It was some of the cell, the prisoners were given. The mirror itself is like 1.5 by 1.5 in a small, tiny wood frame. And it was nailed to the wall.
Wow.
And
that's so awesome.
And he gave it to her. And
did he give it to her off the tour? Was he just like, hey, get this back on the ferry. I'll talk to you later. Wow.
Well, no, I mean. They were talking afterwards and they're
But if you go to Alcatraz, you got to take a boat there. It's not like you know.
Right.
That's awesome.
Exactly. I mean, they used to give tours there, I guess, in the 70s. And I was in University of Missouri back in 1983, and my roommate was a disc jockey and for a Top 40 thing. And he had Countdown America with Dick Clark.
Okay.
And it was like six records. I mean, he just played. He was a disc jockey. he just played it with all commercials and everything like that.
Right.
And he gave the whole thing to me. It was like for that week.
That's awesome. Mitch, you got the spirit of this thing.
Yes.
The paperwork, and it tells you the last four words of the commercial, Alka-Seltzer.
Yeah, production, yeah.
Awesome.
Are those things worth anything, though?
They are. I mean, they're probably not as much as you would think. You do have the whole set. I mean, if you keep it in good condition, it'll only go up in value.
Commercials.
But I'm thinking...
What do you think about that mirror, though?
The mirror, you know, I thought I'd be able to find some, and I can't because it's not like there was just one mirror, so you would think someone would have sold one by now, but I cannot find that, and... I'm thinking that's easily, you know, 200, 250 and up, you know, depending on
how you... I just think that's so cool, man. I wouldn't get rid of that at all. You have party starters,
hey, guys,
man.
Great show. Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Mitch.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Another great...
Finish strong.
That was great. I love the calls.
It was.
Such a variety.
You never
tonight.
Know what's going to walk through the door.
Yeah, but Mitch Gee nailed it right there, man. He had two things right there that makes the swap meet so special. Greg Flamm, at DuPage Picker on Facebook and Twitter, joins us every Wednesday night here. Greg, big weekend planned?
Usual Rosemont selling, and thanks again to the Wolves. They're awesome.
There you go. Greg Flamm, see you next week. That's going to do it for us tonight. Coming up tomorrow night, we have a huge show tomorrow night. George Clinton from P-Funk is going to join us.
What?
Yep.
What?
Yep. George Clinton is at Pitchfork this weekend.
Yeah, he is.
And he is coming on the download tomorrow night.
I am so in awe of that.
Yeah, I know. I'm a huge fan.
Me too.
Yeah.
What time is he on tomorrow?
Yeah.
He will be on in the 9 o'clock hour.
So we need to get here really early to prep, is what you're saying.
I'll be here at noon.
That'd be a good show. I mean, okay, so George Clinton, which is awesome.
Yes.
Jonah Ray, who is the new Mystery Science Theater. They're coming to the Vic Theater this weekend.
What?
So Jonah's going to join us. And then also David Lowery, who is a filmmaker who did Pete's Dragon, who did the new movie, A Ghost Story, which is the movie that's the movie where you see, it's Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara, and it's... A ghost story where the ghost actually wears a bedsheet with two eyes.
I saw the preview for that.
Right. That's tomorrow night.
Well, that's going to be a hell of a show.
Yeah,
right? It sounds like an amazing
show. I know, right?
Show.
I'm so excited. I love when these come together like
this.
Jen Bosworth, Amy Guth in studio in for Patty Vasquez this week. What's on the show tonight, guys?
We've got Kelly Kitley.
Kelly, yeah.
Oh, I know Kelly.
Yeah,
Small World.
Yeah.
She said she was on
It's her 3-month bookiversary.
Yeah.
So we're checking She's in with great. Her about that. She is a delightful person, and we're very excited to have her
great
with us.
Great autobiography, Myself, it's called. So we're going to talk to her. We're also going to talk. I really want to. Guth is an animal whisperer. Speaking of, you know, we were talking about sharks.
We were.
Off the air last night, how she
As you
one.
Do.
As you do. You know.
That's what radio personalities do in commercial breaks.
Around,
we talk about petting
about
sharks.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Not a euphemism.
No.
That's
she actually
shark petting.
And so I want to ask Guth about what my dog is thinking.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
I'm not a dog psychic. No. I'm just like,
but I just
you know,
have
animals
questions.
Get me
they,
and I get
they
them.
They have a bond. I do not. I'm a pet sitting and the dog looks at me like I am the worst thing that ever happened.
And I have a gift for, you know, I bond with creatures, large and small.
There
just the
go.
Other day on Instagram, I put a picture of a bee up because I got right up to the bee.
Okay.
See, right up to him. I was like.
Sharks and bees.
This like is 2 inches away from the bee with my iPhone, like, don't sting me in the face. And then he just was like buzzing around.
She just pet him.
Last year we had, and this is well documented on the download, rabbits, actual mom with little baby rabbits.
That was well documented. Yeah,
and I couldn't stand it, but it was a nature documentary because the little baby rabbits would come out right around, I guess it was twilight, like right when the sun was going to set, because the mom would show up, and the mom would do this thing I'd never seen before to feed, would like almost put its paws out. Like it was almost like create, like almost it was stand on its hind legs and do this to like open up so that the
freaky.
Yeah, so that
That's
the bunnies
freaky.
Could come in and feed.
Did you know that rabbits will scream if you scare them?
Really?
Yeah, they make a little noise. It sounds like a pterodactyl, but cuter.
I might have to try that.
No, don't do it. It makes them. It hurts their feelings.
Oh,
don't
no.
do it. But if you like walk up and try to pick up a rabbit like a cat, they make a little pterodactyl noise. Like
they've
a little,
hurt my feelings by eating my hydrangeas.
Yes,
so.
They're not.
No.
As precious as they seem.
Exactly.
Little Peter Cottontail angel.
All right. All right. Well, have a great show.
Thank you.